It seems a little fast. Well, we'll call the Public Works Facilities Committee to order. Roll call. John O'Day called me last evening, and John is excused. He had a conflict as far as timing, and with the change that we made in our meeting as far as the weeks, he could not change that. So Supervisor O'Day is excused. Otherwise, we have everyone in attendance. Youth and Governance is in attendance. Approval of the minutes of the previous meeting. We have the minutes from January 9th. Supervisor Grady, Supervisor Frederick, on the second, any discussion? If not, all those in favor of approval, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Youth and Governance? Approved. The chairman's comments, we have, it's not overwhelming. We have quite a bit on our agenda this evening. One of the things that we self-imposed was discussion on the plan for the new KD Park. And we'll begin that this evening, and that definitely is something that we will not finalize this evening. We have some resolutions, important resolutions on golf. So as we're going through this agenda, we'll have plenty of time and other days if needed to discuss certain items. That's all I have. Any committee members have any comments or anything they'd like to discuss? Youth and Governance? Citizens' comments would be next. Any citizens that wish to address the committee on any item would have 5 minutes to speak. We ask that you give your name and address, and feel free to comment on anything that you'd like. Anyone wish to speak? Yes, sir.
My name is Scott Barter. Address is 5303 28th Street in Kenosha, and I would like to address the issue on the golf. These comments are mine personally and not from an ethics board, although we're asking people golf and we'll keep score. Ethics and golf is probably another important topic. But on your agenda later is the possible closure of the Red Course at Brightondale. I've been a pass holder for about 8 years, and I probably play 180 rounds, so I feel I'm pretty qualified to talk about this. I would, and a group of us are opposed to closing the Red Course. And the deal is, the lure of Brightondale has always been 45 holes out there. And it was always intended for the recreational golfer, not the high-end golfer. And I think, what do we have to offer in if we're supposed to be operated as a business? And the inventory is the holes to play golf. And if you compare this to a business, which was always supposed to, intended to be a at least break-even proposition, if I compare this to, let's say, Walmart, and what do they got in inventory? They're not going to bother to close their sporting goods store, their sporting goods department anytime soon. So why would we conceivably think about closing 9 holes and the only thing we've got to offer? I will say that the conditions of the course in the last couple of years have been far beyond anything we've ever had. I think that if you compare this to operating a business, and what is Walmart? They roll back their prices. Now, this article says that, I don't know if this survey was done by some Carthage College or whatever it was done, that 70% of the Brightondale customers will stay. That means we lose 30%. We've lost 30%, if you go back and look at your statistics, we probably lost 30% of pass holders in each of the last 3 years, which explains why we got to subsidize this. A taxpayer's money of close to $300,000 each year. I'm a taxpayer. Do I want that? I really don't. But if we go back to, I think it's at least four, maybe the fifth year, at least we broke even. Now, golf is in the recreational golf community, it is a price-driven product. And if we go back to that year, and if you roll back your prices and put bodies on the course, I think you'll be successful. There were some restrictions also that they have for junior and senior passes. The only place I could ever imagine that you encourage people to stay off the golf course until 1 o'clock. Those people aren't going to do that. And you've lost a lot of pass holders, and if you go back and look at your statistics, over the last 3 years, and where have they gone? They're going to Maple Crest, Spring Valley, and Bristol Oaks. And it's all price-driven. And for some reason, we seem to think that Kenosha County's up here, and everybody's going to follow us, and it's not working that way. And you don't have to take my word for it. You look at your profit and loss statements for the last 3 years. So I'm encouraging you to roll back your prices to when you made a profit and things, and put bodies on the course, and keep the red course open. You don't have to discount it, though. And if the philosophy was that, okay, we are going to have restrictions so that we can open up the extra tee times, on, for example, at Brightondale, I could go up there in the last 3 years on any Saturday or Sunday at any time, and I wouldn't need a reservation or a tee time because nobody's playing golf. I used to play golf with guys from Illinois. In Milwaukee, they would travel 45 minutes. They're not coming anymore. One, the gas prices are too high, and two, Kenosha County prices are too high. All I'm suggesting is if you go back to a time when we made money, or at least broke even, I think that makes common sense to me. So anyway, I hope you guys do the right thing, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to speak on our citizens' comments?
Good evening. My name is Ken Gilbauer. I live at 9128 Prairie Village Drive in Pleasant Prairie, Wisconsin. And I am here to comment on the golf division. I've looked through the Velocity report and I followed lots of the topics of discussion over the last many months. And I have to say, the Velocity study is one thing I absolutely agree with, although it's a band-aid, what really needs to be addressed, and that is closing the red line. And attempting to run this golf division is a business. At least you got an opportunity to immediately save some money, and I encourage you tonight as a committee to pass a resolution that will close the Red Nine, so at least we make some progress towards. The hope of this business ever breaking even is pretty slim to none. You cannot, at this time, even make the complete debt service that you're facing, and this year more capital expense was passed, which means that the debt service starting next year is going to be higher by, I'm thinking, $80,000 to $100,000, which just makes it tougher. So what I'd like to have a lot more than 5 minutes to drill down on every detail of that report, but in summary, what it's really saying is making recommendations that the county, using taxpayers' money, borrow money, goes deeper in the long-term debt, spends more money on marketing and advertising on the hope that more golfers will come to the golf course. And then you have to ask the question, where will those golfers come from? Are they going to come from Wyoming, maybe even Illinois? Or are they going to come from other privately held golf courses around here? And that brings me to a real serious principle from my standpoint, is government should not be engaged in commercial enterprise. You're competing against private businesses that are using private capital, and if it's bad weather, they lose their money. If we have bad weather, taxpayers lose money. I hope that this committee, because I think this is where it would start, at some point, if not tonight, would look at not whether we should be using the Velocity study, because it's all based upon keeping the golf business operating, but really looking at a plan to gracefully, hopefully, with minimal economic harm, get out of the golf business. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to speak on our citizens' comments?
Strongly opposed to the closing of the Red Course for two reasons.
First, I do not understand the argument that because the golf courses are not 100% self-sufficient, that they should be either privatized or scaled back. Golf is another form of recreation, not anything but swimming, cycling, or walking for that matter. Yet, we as a community subsidize swimming pools and beaches, bicycle paths, and walking trails, and many other numerous recreational facilities we find featured in our city and county parks. Secondly, we are not talking about building a new golf course, but instead of relinquishing one that is already built. Thus, we would be agreeing to throw away all the money we have already spent on this golf course, not to mention the money we will have to spend in the future on the remaining balance on the original debt service. To my mind, this is akin to tearing down the addition on your house that is not yet paid for because the heating bill is higher than thought. I am wholly sympathetic to your plight. I know that you face extremely difficult decisions in an uncertain economic and political environment. But you are the leaders of this community, and that is the weight you agreed to bear when you chose the path of leadership. You must balance the current economic conditions of the county with your vision of the county once this recession and its aftermath have passed by. What do you wish your legacy to be, that of retreat and dismantlement, of fear of the future, or would you rather embrace the belief that we will rise above our current problems and come out stronger on the other side? You may eliminate this golf course and any numerous other worthwhile investments in our standard of community living, but when you are done, what kind of community will you be leaving behind? We must stand strong behind the vision of this community that our forefathers passed on to us, a community that educates its children, that cares for its sick, elderly, and downtrodden, and yes, that raises the climate of living by providing multiple and varied recreational activities for its people to enjoy. In closing, I'll leave you with the words of Ronald Reagan. There are no constraints on the human mind, no walls around the human spirit, no barriers to our progress, except those we ourselves erect.
Thank you. Citizens' comments are closed.
So you know, you can't hear what people are saying if you're in the crowd.
Well, we do have a mic then. We didn't know that.
Okay. So.
Hey, hang on then, Doug.
All right.
Capturing whatever amount of money we borrow to get get the dog parks active. We've got swimming facilities at two different parks. We're not concerned that they are making money. We are putting in hiking trails. We put in a bike path through Petrified Springs right alongside of the road. I mean, how much did that cost us? And we're not concerned about that cost in regards to the return that we're getting against that. I just think that, you know, it's a recreational activity. We need to continue on with the 9-hole course, you know, with the red course. Another thing that I don't like about it is a year ago, we had a different study, and that study was to make a premier course, and I think we were going to call it the black course. And the red course was a big part of what was once, you know, a short year ago was going to be the black premier course, and the major draw of it, one of the best holes on the nine, is the course that goes along the lake, which is hole number 8 on the red. That was going to become hole number 18. And now a year later, we're thinking of closing the same course that was going to be the premier course. I mean, think about the dichotomy of that. It's kind of astounding. What I do believe we need to do is ask for a further marketing study, and I questioned this the night of the presentation, further marketing study on what we can do in a golf operation to attract the emerging baby boomers that are going to have so much leisure time available to them. Our future senior citizens, in the short term, that's the future success of Brightdale Golf Course. We have to do whatever it takes to attract some more golfers, get back the golfers that we lost that are playing in other places. That's what we have to focus on, and I would like to see the marketing study focus more on that. Years ago, we had a whole different staff here, and I was on this committee, and Vicki will remember because she was taking the minutes at that time, but I challenged the staff to come up with something, you know, different ideas, thinking out of the box, and come up with something that would attract seniors, and I suggested somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but not a foot massage. After you got done playing your 18, you get a foot massage if you're a senior citizen. I would like to see something like that, as crazy as that may sound. And maybe it's not, you know, the older I get, the foot massage sounds better and better. But something like that. Let's hear some marketing particular strategies that nobody else maybe has tried yet that maybe we can try to get them back. I think once we get those golfers back, they'll stay with us. Because the course is so nice compared to what it was when they were leaving. Thank you.
Thank you, Doug.
Don Bean, 90-4336 Avenue, Kenosha, but I live in Bristol. I have a couple things I'm going to try to do in 5 minutes, but one is the nine holes, the red course at Brightdale. I was lucky enough to serve on the Highway Parks Committee when that was built. And if everybody can remember what it was like when they turned in woods and added to the course, they add another nine holes. It's a pretty nice piece of property, but what you got to do to go through it to return it. And I would see that if you close it, you try to return it a number of years from now to get it back. And I can also tell you what it is to clean up a property. I got a property right across the street from here in the woods. I've been cleaning it up for 10 years, buckthorn, honeysuckle. When you let that stuff come back, you're not passing stuff that it protects stuff like buckthorn. And I wouldn't want to see it turn into a wetland and just left go, especially that you've invested some stuff there and paved park paths and stuff like that. Unfortunately, I don't get to golf out there as much as I'd like to, but when I have my brother come home from Florida, we like to go out there with my family and golf, and it's a lot to be proud of. And some of the previous speakers had mentioned that, you know, I remember the talk at the time. We heard from everybody else, all the private courses, you know, that the county's expanding in the private sector. in the private sector, this is a recreational thing that we've had. These golf courses have been here forever, and we've enhanced the two that we have. And it is for the taxpayer and the people. I complain, I pay down near $25,000 in property taxes with my properties, and I complain about it, but I want to have some amenities there for when I get some free time. And going backwards is not moving forward. Going backwards is closing stuff down. And it is improved, and if you watch the change, I see when they cleared out the fence lines and enhanced that property. And I would, short-term answers, and take a study done by some wonderful kids and turn it into your plan. I think that's the wrong way. That's why we have county board supervisors and people that sit on these committees that represent the taxpayer. And for that, I'm speaking on that behalf. And at the time, we talked about wall diamonds. At the time, we did an ice arena. Turned around, we sold that for next to nothing. It has nothing to do with here, but the old 60th Street garage was sold. But the, you know, they're going to build wall diamonds and stuff, and the people that invested to have low-income and senior students together, that plan really didn't follow through. And nobody's taken that issue on and find out why that the developer there didn't fulfill their end of the agreement. It was, I know I came to a county board meeting and handed my wallet in the back, and it was interrupted when I want to say that we were just to make money off the project, the people that were involved in that, but it wasn't a benefit to the taxpayer or the senior citizens or the board. And mixing the two, I didn't think you'd go together anyways, but at any rate, when you're doing something, it should be the most bang for the buck, and that was the thing with the ice arena. There was another thing, but we got wall diamonds, horse trails, you know, biking, all the stuff, and this is just one other thing to make people want to come to your community. Closing it down when it turns in the beaches in one of them. The other thing I wanted to say, with issue with the county parks, I actually called, and all the staff, Ray Arbit, I talked to, we had people on recalls, take residents up in the park here, Paddock Lake, Old Settlers Park, with flashing strobe lights, signs were up, and I was, I don't like that. And the reason I don't like it, I recall that there were ordinances on the county, when I was on the parks, that protected for that from that kind of stuff. Our parks shouldn't be cluttered. You know, you want to have opinions, not our county parks. And the reason I say it is when I was young, my dad took me through Petrified Springs Park. And it was during Vietnam, and women decided they were going to burn their bras and turn vans into love wagons. And you take you down to the park, close them down. You couldn't go in there. There was needles all over the place. Well, there's ordinance created to protect these parks that are all of ours. And to tell me that somebody's got constitutional rights to sit out next to the highway with flashing lights and stuff to recall people is wrong. And then I was told that, well, they did it when they were recalling Wirch. I go to Paddock Lake every day, and there was nobody that sat out there and did that. But more importantly, I was upset with an article that came on the paper with our sheriff, who thought he was enforcing something that was on the books, and all the other municipalities followed along with it, and it was overzealous sheriff. I was upset that somebody didn't come and lay out the, and I actually called Jenny Tunkowitz, and I was upset that somebody don't come out to protect. Actually talked to her before that, the next day of this article in the paper with overzealous sheriff. We got an overzealous Kenosha newspaper and an editor of that opinion page. To attack a guy for coming out when he apologizes is totally wrong. He apologized, he said he was in error. You let him stand and take down your posters and stuff. I have family that live out there, and I know the community. My daughter teaches out there. Everybody don't want to see that stuff. There's a few, so we let the few bullies run over top of everybody else. And I think it's wrong. But there's an ordinance, and I have a copy of it here, and I knew there was something there, and I got it after I talked to Mr. Arvin. And I got Bernie Bosch's opinion, which is a bunch of gobbledygook that's talking about protecting the Constitution. We have a set of rules here, and it doesn't matter what of whatever rules you want to follow, there's ordinance that this body, the county board, approve and vote on to protect the stuff for everybody. And now we're going to let somebody get away with knocking a sheriff because they don't know the Constitution? He's got rules to follow, and I can read it if you'd like me to. He's to enforce it. He's the person who's elected by the people to enforce these ordinances. It says right there you can't do it. If you're going to be there, you got to have a permit. No permits were ever issued. And to keep everybody calm, let's just let this pass. Well, there's certain people, it's unions, that aren't going to let it pass. And so I don't want to see somebody change the rules for our county parks because of this issue of coming up and bringing back, recalling people. I think it's wrong. And I think people got to be heard, but nobody wants to step on anybody's toes, and that's what I got from the opinion from Bernie Bosch. Let's not step on anybody's toes. Well, if you don't crack it out, pretty soon they'll be camping out there and exercising their rights, just like they'll take over there, like they've done on Wall Street. I don't want to see that. If I want to go to the park, I don't want some hooligan out there in a tent holding a sign up in front of me. And I don't want it on Highway 50 distracting from the traffic. I think it's wrong. The last thing I wanted to say is my business down here, and Gary Sisma's been terrific with me for the Highway Committee. I'm hoping that a light or something can get put down on the corner of MB and 50, because in the last 12 years, my gates have been gone through six times, and one time they took down a post. It's not even when they're driving. Normally, they're drunk or they're on drugs, and they hit it. Usually Saturday night, between midnight and 4 in the morning is when they go down. And fortunately, the last couple of times there's been a license plate there that I could, and they had insurance. But they leave and leave me with thousands of dollars worth of damage. If they get away without a license, it costs me, it's been between $12,000 and $24,000 to replace them. And it's not something that I don't want to keep turning on my insurance, because naturally my rate goes up. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to speak under citizens' comments? Everyone that was here, I thank you. And we are going to be addressing these items tonight, especially. I'd invite you to stick around for the item 11 on our agenda, the discussion we're going to have on the the Braindale Golf Course. We also are going to be discussing the parks as far as the groups of people, what they can do and what can't be done. So we'll move on. Citizens' comments are closed. Facilities, we're going to move to item number 6 on our agenda. Old business facilities, there's a group of updates. Frank, are you going to do those?
Frank's going to do the first one.
The courthouse completed. We opened up the parking lot, the parking lot, right on time on January 16th. So everybody was happy about that. Got the parking spaces back. So just wrapping up the last ends, but it's substantially complete. Which one's going?
Oh, Bowder, can you hear Mr. Chairman?
I can hear, but maybe they can't.
Courthouse restoration project is substantially complete. We opened up the last parking lot, the East Molinero parking lot, right on time on January 16th. Like I said, it made the most people utilize that parking lot very happy. So we just have a few small bunch of slide items, and it is substantially complete. Any questions?
Any questions from anyone? So we're looking at spring for landscaping and those things. Right. So then the parking structure.
That one I'll take, Mr. Chairman. I'll be fine, Frank. Just to update, and just to give an overview of what we're going to talk about facilities, most all of these will be pretty small, concise, because not a lot has not changed from our last meeting. But there'll be a couple that are going to be worth digging into a little bit. Parking structure, we had a meeting with Mead and Hunt as the engineering firm. Contract is finalized by the state. We had a scoping meeting last week. We've developed a draft schedule for that project, and it looks like we'll be able to get everything done this summer, which is the security system, the lighting system corrections, and the control access things. We'll be coming to the committee in the next few months, probably not next month, but in the next few months, with some pricing, policy decisions, and stuff like that, as well as we develop the actual control to that structure. That's pretty much it.
And the cost for that, Ray?
Cost
for... Where does it come from?
It's left over in the original project yet. There's $180,000 left in the original project budget. We're estimating what we've got to do, including the engineering and design work, about
$172,000. Okay.
Brookside. Maysman, the construction company, our demolition company, has resolved their problem with the state. They've agreed to pay back wages, or have paid back wages. So they're able to finish the project. With the weather being nice the way it is, they've started trucking in black dirt for the landscaping. Last couple of days made it a little difficult, but they'll continue bringing dirt in the rest of the week. And hopefully we can get everything laid out in time for the asphalt plants to open, and they'll be able to do the second phase of the parking lot and some sidewalks that have to be put in.
Any questions on any of that? Corporation Council, remodel, relocate. I know that they're in and done, and then I was told at an executive committee meeting the other night that their feet are cold, so we can get an update on that.
Yeah, Ron can speak to that.
I had maintenance go over and talk to Frank this afternoon, and Frank said that it was just a comment that he made. He wasn't really complaining. Today, he said the wet temperature was just fine.
Really?
We checked the temperature, it appeared to be good, he didn't complain. And we told him if he has any further complaints, give us a call right away and we'll check into it.
The only other thing on that is that we're still looking at, it's going to take us a little bit, but we're still looking at clearing out the house, which involves getting the last file, or not files so much, but as a, well, some files for Corp Counsel into what used to be the old server room in IT where they're at now. And IT still needs to kind of rejigger, technical IT term, some of their stuff that they've got left there before we can bring those files over. And then Ron's looking into the basement of the Anderson House as being a place that we can move the History Center's remaining stuff in that building. It's just going to take us a while to kind of sort through that, but that's the game plan to get that so we can get that building cleared out and on the market.
So then we'll move to the Detention Center.
Detention Center, where all the doors are in place. We had they put the wrong kick plates on the doors. They've been removed. We'll get the correct kick plates put on hopefully within the next week. And go through the punch list, and by next month meeting, that project should be closed out.
So then we move to item F, radio tower analysis.
Yeah, this one's, I'll drill down into this a little bit tonight. As I told you at the last meeting, there were some fairly significant issues found with the 60th Street Tower. Good news is that the information we've got on the 45 and 50 tower, the tower here and the tower out at Silver Lake, are really in really good shape. There's minimal stuff that we need to do to keep those two towers in shape. The 60th Street Tower, on the other hand, is, and I didn't bring the full report yet. I'll have the full report at next month's meeting because I just had a conversation with the structural engineer as late as this afternoon trying to get, they had to climb it a second time about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago now, to gather more information. The first climb they did was December 27th, at which time they found some pretty significant issues with the tower. Most significantly is that if we removed every antenna and every cable that's mounted on that tower, it would, by the weight of itself, in other words, supporting itself, it's about 246% overweight with just holding itself up. That sounds pretty dramatic, and it is, but when you put it in the context of an engineering, kind of looking at it through an engineering eyeglass, it's not as dramatic as it sounds. Bottom line, are we going to need to do something with that tower sooner rather than later? Absolutely. Is it in danger of falling over tomorrow? Not based on the conversation I had with the guy this afternoon. I want to get him what we talked about this afternoon. I want to get him to put that in writing so I can bring that forward to the committee next week. To summarize kind of the condition of the tower, if we do have an inch of radial ice buildup and 45 mile an hour winds, we're not in good shape with that tower in its current condition. Is that in the realm of possibility? Absolutely. Is there, can a tornado come through the community? Absolutely. So in terms of what other things the tower's at risk for right now, though, average daily events and daily weather conditions are not going to be a problem. But those events that are considered severe, 1 inch of radial ice buildup, which the last time that happened was 1979, it was 3/4 of an inch of ice buildup. None of our towers were affected, but throughout the state there were a number of towers that did go down because there was like 50-mile-an-hour winds and 3/4 of an inch of ice radial buildup on towers. Those are the kind of events that would really put that tower in jeopardy. Like I said, I just wanted to get it on the committee's radar that we're going to have to do, we're going to have to develop a game plan this year for what we're going to be able to do with that tower next year. That's pretty much the bottom line.
Does anybody have any questions for Ray on this?
Not on the 60th Street Tower specifically, but on the downtown campus, we had some concerns about towers down there, not the monopole, but the structure one on the roof. Can you comment upon that?
Yeah, we haven't done, the lattice tower is going to be after we get kind of these three main, because the lattice tower, I won't say it's decommissioned, but any of the stuff, which is minimal at this point, that's functioning, that's left on that tower, is either redundant or it's not a primary type of means of communication. Anything of any importance that was on that tower has been moved to the monopole. It's been condensed, so there was a number of, if you look at that antenna, if you go up on the roof now and look at that antenna or that tower, there's still a number of pieces of, and there's a number of antennas on it, but most of them are non-functioning. There's nothing on there that's critical to our EMS system right now.
So in fairly short fashion, that would be considered to be expendable? Is that the problem?
It could be, or it could be, if we strip it down, once we take a look at it, it may make sense to keep it for some redundancy down the road, or it may make sense to just peel the whole thing off the roof.
So it has been analyzed or it has not been analyzed?
Has not been analyzed yet.
That's my question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions for Ray on that? So we'll move on to the Brookside Health and Facilities Survey.
That's one I'll handle too. Again, kind of put that on the radar of the committee last month. More information. There was a total of 13 sites. When Brookside had their facility survey, there was, I want to emphasize, there was zero health, it was a perfect survey from a health standpoint. And evidently the facility piece of that survey is not as critical, obviously, as the health part, because that has to do with how they're running the show. But there were 13 sites. And 13 sites, largely the result of a new inspector. There was a lot of retirements in the state. This inspector, it was the first time he had been through the facility, and he looked at things with a completely different eye than the inspectors have for the last 16 years of its operation. So he found a number of things that have been the way they are today, as they were from day one when everybody moved into the facility. Happy to say that of the 13 sites, 10 of them have already been completely resolved. They were minor enough that either staff could resolve them internally or with minimal expense, outside contractors were brought in to do some of the work. 10 of the 13 have been resolved. There's three sites outstanding, and actually only one of them, two of them are still, the state has a deadline for us to fix. One is putting a sprinkler over the deck. If you're familiar with the Brookside dining room, there's a deck that the previous inspector said we couldn't use. So it's never been used since the building was open. This inspector said you're perfectly fine to use that deck off the dining room, but you got to have sprinklers on it. It was supposed to be sprinklered from the day it was built. So we're going to have those sprinklers put in. It's a minimal cost. It's about $1,200. That's scheduled to be done, should be done by the middle of March. The two remaining sites, one of them has to do with work above in the attic with smoke barrier walls. And the penetrations of ductwork, access doors that go through those smoke barrier walls and so forth that were constructed incorrectly from the day it was constructed. We contacted C.G. Schmidt, who was the original contractor on the job back in 1995, and they have been a very, very high integrity firm. We met with them for the second time last week. They've committed to taking care of all the work above that, which is probably going to be about 4 weeks worth of work with, I think, four tradesmen they're planning on having do it, to fireproof and correct all the incorrect stuff up above in the attic on their dime. The only thing that we're going to pay for as a county is going to be the access doors that are up there, because those were incorrectly spec'd out, and they, by the architect, they were put in, and so it wasn't their fault. They were incorrectly spec'd out. They put in the doors that were spec'd out, but they're not correct. That'll only be, as far as the county costs, it's going to be about between $2,000 and $3,000 for the doors. All the other work they're doing on their dime. The remaining piece of work, and that work has to be done by September 4th of this year, as far as our commitment to the state. The remaining work that needs to be done is all of the above the acoustic ceiling in the hallways and all the residence rooms. There's basically each of the rooms has a drywall box. And the walls, you see those, so they were taped and mudded properly and sealed. And then there's an acoustic ceiling that's about 18 inches below the actual ceiling deck or ceiling lid that's drywall. Well, the screws and the seams were not taped and mudded up there, as they need to be to meet the one-hour smoke barrier fire rating. So that's the work that has to be done yet. What we've had a meeting with C.G. Schmidt last week, their research of the original documents indicates that they did that work per the specifications. It's arguable at this point whether the specifications were correct or incorrect. Bottom line is we're now going back and contacting the architect, and we're going to start to work that process to find out who's at fault for the conditions that we have out there that are going to need to be addressed. The good news is that is not, we challenged that site by the state because the inspector happened to write it up under the wrong site. He used the wrong administrative rule. We were able to get it tossed. So there is no time frame right now that we need to get that situation corrected. That said, the inspector knows now that he cited the wrong administrative rule, the issue still remains. So next time he comes through, he's going to make sure he cites the right thing. So we're still considering that. We're going to have to get that issue resolved. Like I say, we've engaged C.G. Schmidt. At this point, they've been very good and unbelievably cooperative with us. The architect is next up to bat. I'm hoping that we'll have the same kind of outcome with working with them. And hopefully we can get it resolved at minimal or no cost to the county.
So the architectural firm, they're still in business. And then the only other question, I know I asked you this prior, the state and city inspector that inspected all this work, is there any repercussions there? Because all this was inspected by someone, and now we're spending money again.
Right. The first point you made about the architect, actually the architectural firm that was in business at the time is no longer in existence, but they got swallowed up by a bigger firm that is in existence, and we've actually been able to track down the actual architects that were involved too. So we do have that information. With regard to the inspection, I asked that of the inspector the day of the exit interview when he came in and was going through all this stuff. So what if you guys find this 30 years from now? You know, what's the statute? There's no statute of limitations. One inspector can look at it and miss it completely. The next one can come through 10 years later or whenever. It doesn't have any effect on the impact. Once it's found, it stands on its own merit regardless of when it was found. As far as, the cities, you know, what they were doing for inspecting, like normally I know in the safety building, the fire guy from KFD, the fire marshal or whatever his title, all he does is inspect buildings. He was through that building like every 2 weeks, sometimes more often. And
don't they have to put a sticker on and then you move on to the next phase, usually?
That's what they did, you know, on this current.
On your home they do that.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. What process they did back then, I can't say. One of the things the state inspector said, because I said, well, wait, now if the plans were approved, the plans have to go through the state approval process too.
Right.
But back then there was two agencies that reviewed it. There was the Department of Administration, and I want to say Dillard, Department of Industry, Labor, and Human Relations. And each of them had different roles and responsibilities, and a lot of times there was stuff like this, and things got approved by one body, didn't get approved by another, kind of a bureaucratic mess. The thing that was interesting, when we sat down with C.G. Schmidt last week, they're actually doing this same thing with other both private and public entities, because the inspector roster has been reconfigured, so there's all new inspectors going in new buildings, new hospitals across the state. And they're actually, they're involved in a project right now for not their job, but it was a contractor that built a nursing home 5 years ago, and they won't stand behind it. And C.G. Schmidt's coming in to actually help resolve that situation for the owner. So it sounds like, because of this change in inspectors, that there's actually, this is happening throughout the state, because people are looking at stuff and finding stuff that's been there since day one when buildings have been opened.
Any other questions for Rick?
Just in terms of the second part that you mentioned, in terms of bringing into compliance, is there a timeline of how long it would take to remedy that situation from a structural standpoint?
On the drywall screws specifically, we aren't under a timeline right now. The only timeline would be that we know that the next inspectional, since they just had it in December right before Christmas, they're eligible for the next inspection, I think, like right after December 1st of this year.
No, we're clear on that, but just on how long it would take to remedy that situation.
Oh, to actually correct. I haven't got that. No, I haven't got an estimate on that yet.
It's a big fix. It's a small fix. It's, you know.
It's a big fix.
Okay.
It won't be a 5-minute fix because of the logistics involved of when you're doing, you'll have to take the ceiling down, do that. So the residents obviously are going to have to be out of the room.
Throughout the entire structure?
All 154 rooms.
That's my question.
Yep. It's big.
It'll be a logistical challenge, yes.
Anything else on that? Safety building energy utilization plan.
That was just the report, hopefully made it in the packet. That was the follow-up 12-month report, and we added a couple statistics that Supervisor Grady had asked for, breaking it up on a square footage basis. I think that it shows overall that adding the 60,000 square foot that we did to the building really was a pretty efficient add. What we did in the 60,000 square foot addition, as well as looking at the gas side of it, considering this.
Well, unfortunately, it wasn't included in anybody's package.
It was supposed to be.
Well, no, we could do the next meeting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll get it out to you because And then we can just save it for next month.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I got it, and it was really good. So we can move on. New business facilities done. And then I'm assuming the lengthy list of updates here on these past projects, we can be eliminating a couple of these off of our updates here in the next month, because I think we're wrapping a lot of
this
up.
I think so. And there'll be new ones coming on now as we start to line up the projects for this year. We'll start to add projects onto the new side of that equation.
So we'll move on to new business for highways. Mr. Sifflin.
I have a few items. The first, on Thursday at the Finance and Administrative Committee meeting, there'll be an item that reclassifies a stockman position to a shop operator position within the Highway Department. What this involves is there's two support positions within our shop area. Currently, one's the stock person, the other's a shop operator. We have found that there's been a tremendous increase in the complexities involved in maintaining and repairing equipment. A lot of that having to do with computerized diagnostic repair of equipment and what we'd like to do is get this stock person position changed to a higher skill level position. And we do have that opportunity now because the stock person recently retired. The reclassified position would do all the essential functions of the old stock person's position, but in addition, we'd be looking at implementing a computerized preventive maintenance system. We're looking at that position being a liaison between equipment manufacturers and our mechanics. I don't know if you remember, you used to use manuals to determine how to repair equipment. That's no longer the case. There are no manuals. Everything is online and needs to be interpreted. And we're looking at providing assistance to the mechanics in that area. In addition, the person that would be in the new reclassified position would have all the mechanic skills necessary to assist mechanics and fill in when necessary during periods of a lot of work that needs to be done. So it's just an attempt to increase the efficiency of the shop, and that will be on Thursday's agenda at the Finance Administration.
Any questions on that? Here, is there a financial?
That would all be presented. I don't do the financial part of it. That would all be presented at the committee level. But there is, it's an increase in pay. There is a little increase compared from the stockman up to this new reclassified.
And it's position. Someone from in-house?
It would be, it is someone from in-house. That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Next item, I received as a member of the County Traffic Safety Committee a resolution from the town of Wheatland. The resolution supports installing turn lane signals at the intersection of Highway 50 and Highway P. This is in the town is responding to a recent fatal accident at that location, and according to their research, there's been numerous right angle accidents with, involving turning vehicles. So our next highway our traffic safety commission meeting is March 8th, so I will have this item on that committee agenda and look for committee support on that, and if this committee has an interest in providing some support, we can certainly do that too. Next item is in the village of Pleasant Prairie, the American Transmission Company, ATC, has proposed installing a high voltage transmission line from Zion, Illinois to the power plant in Pleasant Prairie. The ATC has two alternative routes to install these overhead high voltage lines. One of them generally follows Highway 31 out of Illinois and to the power plant, and the other alternative generally follows the UP railroad tracks out of Illinois and basically straight up to the power plant. We've reviewed this project. We've met with Pleasant Prairie. Pleasant Prairie has gone on record. Village Board has passed a resolution in support of the route on the railroad. We've reviewed that both routes, and we have to agree, and particularly from a highway standpoint, from a traffic safety standpoint, and from access control along Highway 31, we certainly agree with the village that Public Service Commission is having a hearing next week. I intend to appear at the hearing and in support of the village's position and from a traffic and highway standpoint, a position of in support of the route along the railroad tracks. Last item is we've had a lot of input, phone calls, interest in the new intersection on Highway L and 39th Avenue. And recently, the city completed a reconstruction project on 39th Avenue, which made that a four-legged type intersection. Apparently, there's definitely a lot of concern about the safety of that. Right now, 39th Avenue is required to stop. Highway L is a through road. It's not required to stop. I am of the opinion that the concerns need to be addressed by the city of Kenosha. We didn't have any accident problem there prior to opening that other leg of the intersection, and that new intersection was designed and built by the city, and we need to have their participation in correcting that problem. Basically, they created it. You know, they have to at least participate in correcting it. And as of right now, we're not getting any participation. They've done a warrant analysis for a four-way stop and for a traffic signal, and they say that neither of those warrants are met, so they're basically not going to pursue it any further. Comments I mostly get are involved in installing a four-way stop there, and while that can be done quickly and inexpensively, it does present its own set of problems because of the differential in traffic volumes between Highway L and 39th Avenue. They're stopping all those cars on Highway L is likely going to during peak hours particularly create a congestion problems. There's problems associated with positioning stop signs. Right now there's turn lanes in both directions on Highway L. The stop signs would either have to be positioned, you know, far off to the side of the road where visibility is poor, or they would need to we would need to construct islands and reconstruct the turn lanes to put in the sign. So we would really like to pursue the having traffic signals installed there. We anticipated some additional traffic generated by 39th Avenue on Highway E. The county has, you know, moved forward with the signals. In fact, they were just activated the other day, so they are operating now. So, you know, we still are in have the position that the traffic signals are the route to go, and you know, until we can get the city to work together on a joint project, we're not moving forward with any other action on that at this time.
We get a lot of phone calls, or you get a lot of phone calls.
I do.
But we didn't do the project.
We did not.
That's about number six.
Yeah, we just wanted to make sure the committee was aware of that, because there's been the volume of phone calls.
Oh, I know Gary's inundated with this, and it's not our deal.
I'm more than happy to cooperate on a project, you know, to jointly fund a project. You know, I think that's appropriate. We do have jurisdiction over Highway L, but, you know, at this point, there's just no, you know, nothing on the other end to work with.
Maybe we can go to mediation with them.
And that was all the items I had.
I have a question for Mr. Sussman.
Well, don't you have a resolution on fuel or no?
Yeah, I think Jim's going to take that.
Oh, Jim's going to do that. Okay. Go ahead.
I was made aware last week, a gentleman who spoke at the podium, about the intersection of MB and Highway 50 as it comes south. And I take to heart his understanding, his questions about the property damage. My concern resolves around the public safety nature of people running through that intersection at hours of the daytime evening and possibly colliding with traffic on Highway 50. That seems to be a very real possibility. If you had any opportunity to look into the MB Highway 50 situation.
Yes, and that's a legitimate problem. I mean, as Don Bean had mentioned, there's been 6 or 7 accidents occurring there. What I would like to do first is install a street light at that intersection. Right now, there are no street lights. I think if we can get a street light position so that the light shines down on the stop sign, and just the fact of having a light there, I think just the atmosphere changes at night, where you realize, like many intersections or areas where there are lights, you know, there's a stop condition there. So I think that relatively inexpensive way to start up to address that problem. Adjusting the stop signs a little bit problematic, only because Wisconsin Department of Transportation has jurisdiction over those signs, and you know, it's a little more difficult to address things through the state.
Just from a traffic safety standpoint, does it really affect the motoring public to have the preceding sign before the stop sign that says stop ahead? Or is that really a beneficial thing, or is that not?
I think on highways, I do think it is. At higher speed roads, I think they're definitely help out a lot, and we have them at all of our intersections on the county trunk highway system.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This one.
I have a question, Mr. Chairman. Gary, is there any possibility that you could put a flashing stop sign there?
Well, that's the problem with having to work through the state to get that in there. They don't look real favorable on blinker stop signs. We've had tremendous success with them. And it's certainly something that we can look into. I'd really like to try the street light first and see if that would work. But if not a blinker stop, perhaps just the red beacon on top of the sign. They may look at that more favorable than the blinker stop. And we have one on Highway JB and 45, a solar power beacon.
Yes, you do.
Really, real happy with how that's been working. So,
and I can just reiterate that the one on 142 and MB has certainly been a big help.
The street light?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yes.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Well, we'll start there, and we'll you know, hopefully, you know, we'll get this corrected.
Thank you.
And this is the MB on the south side of it.
It's the MB on the north side of 50, where it goes north. Yeah.
His driveway's on the south side.
Yeah, his driveway is directly across from the intersection, and people keep going through and smashing into the gate.
His business driveway.
business trip. Yeah. Yeah, and it's documented six times.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't one of the bank drivers a couple weeks ago.
Oh, I could be.
So, any other questions for Mr. Sipsma? Thank you, Gary. So then we'll move on to the resolution to transfer funds.
In your packages, the resolution to transfer funds within 2001 Department of Public Works budget. Whereas the 2011 Public Works budget was based on estimates, and whereas the actual purchase price of fuel per gallon in 2011 was approximately $3.33, exceeded the budgeted purchase price per gallon at approximately $2.40. And whereas the cost of every division has shortages, and their supply appropriations of approximately $25,000 in golf and $150,000 in highway. Whereas there are sufficient funds within the public works contractual services appropriation to cover golf and highway supply appropriation shortfalls. And whereas no dollars are needed from the general fund, therefore be it resolved that the Kenosha County Board of Supervisors approves the 2011 Department of Public Works budget modification as attached and incorporated by reference.
Any questions? Any discussion?
Jim, where did you put us on the timeline? This is for 2011?
Yes, the last year.
Okay, so this has nothing to do with this particular fiscal year?
No, this year's budget for gasoline is at about $600,000 for highways. I think it's $85,000 or $90,000 for parks. It's much closer to what we've actually been spending.
Thank you.
Any other questions or discussion? Jim, what did we budget per gallon for this upcoming year?
Same as right around $3.30. About the same as what we spent in 2011.
Yeah. So now what I've been told this week was that we're probably looking at closer to $4.
Well, the $3.30 is after tax, or we net out taxes. So it should be okay.
Should be good. Yeah. Should be close.
Yeah, it will be interesting, though, because the same reports you're seeing, yeah, we're seeing those, too. That is, they're saying over $4 a gallon for the
fall. Chicagoland area, $4.95.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. So
we did spend $4. Last year, we spent about $560,000. So this year, we budgeted $600,000. So it is up a little bit in total.
Any other questions or discussion? If not, do we have a motion?
I'll move to approve the resolution.
Moved by Supervisor Guest, seconded by Supervisor Frederick to approve the resolution. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Youth and Governance? Ayes. So it carries. Now, do you have a resolution we need to sign here? Does this have to go to... Coming.
Yep.
Yeah, all these resolutions I think I'll be collecting and taking down for
right.
Finance. So I don't know who they were stops over there.
Thank you. Now we're going to move on to an item that we put on our agenda to discuss. And again, I want to stress, we don't have to solve all these, or at least this part here this evening. Everyone's had the new master park plan that we had being done. Everyone's had some time to look at things. I'm sure there's been... I've had feedback from residents and from constituents. I'm sure other people have also. So I think tonight I just wanted to begin this with what thoughts any committee members had, any recommendations. And then, as we move ahead, do we amend, you know, this master plan to make recommendations to the county board and to the administration? So, just kind of open for discussion as far as what people thought of this plan and any feedback that they've been getting. So, just gonna, Supervisor Frederick.
The feedback I've been getting, they think it's wonderful, but we can't afford it. However, if the county wants to seek out grants to pay for some of the stuff and private funding, that's fine. But they don't want to. They do not want it to be on the tax rolls. They said we have too much already.
Right. Supervisor Esposito.
Yeah, I concur with that. I've gotten a lot of feedback. They think it's a good plan. I've talked to them about the modular aspect going forward, one increment at a time, and grants. And we also talked about these big corporate sponsor partnerships to help fund a lot of this. But you know, at the end of the day, it comes down to dollars and cents, and that seems to be where the deterrent is on my part. Thank you.
So you're great.
Echoing the same things, people that have seen this think it's a very nice document, plans, location, all in favor, but the question is, how are you going to fund it? Where's the money coming from? And I'm in a position to say, well, I don't really have an answer for you yet. It's something we're taking a look into as a committee. But I think it may be advisable for this committee to do, much as the county board has done in the past, when you talk about tax levies, to have come to some type of consensus of, first of all, are we comfortable with the private partnership aspect, having sponsors doing various demonstration projects, and to what extent would we be comfortable saying this is as much as we can pony up as a county, we're looking for this type of sponsorship, and you at least have some type of approximations or guidelines moving forward, each party knows what to expect. That would be just a recommendation I would make.
I've basically gotten the same feedback, I think, as everyone else, all the other supervisors, that it's a good plan. It's obviously been well thought out, done a good job in the preparation of it. Regarding the partnership part of it, I think that's an excellent idea. Looking for grants or maybe some matching dollars where the county would match some other dollars that were put forth. I know that, and I don't, maybe you can answer this for me, Mr. Chairman, is I know that we get some revenue from waste management every year, and is that money earmarked specifically for this park development?
It was. We used to get $250,000 from waste management. Now, with their big cutbacks, it's down to, I think, 50, but the 250 was 10 or 11 years ago we acquired this land, and it was designated for that. It was stolen. All of it was stolen out of it. So, when I say stolen, I mean it was used for other things.
Yeah.
So, after the initial acquisition, we were supposed to build up a fund, you know, and right now it would have been a couple million bucks. But it's all been used for other things.
And wasn't some of that used to develop the baseball diamonds too?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep. But it was a lot of other things too.
So right. But I would like to possibly see us go back to reverting back to that money. It's 50 or 7. I can't remember.
What is it, Ray? 50
or 75,000?
I believe it's 75. I misspoke one time. It's 75 now.
Revert that money back to the development of this park and earmark it for that and not use it for anything else. I mean, that's revenue. That's money that obviously it's not taxpayer money. So, and then maybe find some matching funds to, at least you've got to start with some money and matching funds to go along with that. So that's a possibility that we could take a look at. But all in all, I think it's a great idea. It's a beautiful piece of property out there. It's something that we need to preserve for this community and to preserve it for the future. So we should do whatever is within our power to help develop that, because it's not only going to enhance the people who are here now, it's going to enhance people for years to come. And it's something that's always going to be there for everybody. So, and it's going to help with the promoting economic development in this community.
Anything else?
I just had a question, John. On page 3, where it talks about vision development philosophy, could you just comment to us on these first few bullet points on page 3? Does this seem to mesh fairly well with what you've been meeting in the Green Ribbon Committee for the...
Let me get to 3. Well, you know, what we did actually was kind of turn the Green Ribbon Committee loose, and they went into subcommittees and, you know, came up with these visions. Now, there are going to be some things, and I'm going to bring some of them up here this evening, but we don't have to get in depth, that my personal opinion is going to differ from some of this. Because I've gotten more feedback, I believe, than most people have, just because I live right there.
Sure.
But definitely. I mean, I've agreed with what everyone has said this evening. The beauty of it, if we had $15 million, you know, to just do, would be there. But there's definite things that people don't want to see, you know, that they've seen and read in the newspaper. I've been on the county board for 17 years, and I've never been yanked aside in the grocery store as often as I have about these wind towers along Highway KD. People have said, you would not allow that. And I said, no, this is just it's pictures, it's forecasts of how things could look. But if you take Highway KD, the rural look and the New Munster Wildlife Preserve to the right, they do not want to see wind turbines going down Highway KD. So, I mean, I would have to fight that till my last breath in order to stay living in that area. You have, and I realize it's concept drawings, but you have much better areas if you want to do wind turbines up in the high hills on the west side of that property. You know, so that's just one thing on the feedback. But if you get into that, the vision statement, I think is very well done.
It is accurate.
Yeah. You know, see if I can figure what page that is. And something I think we should discuss, if no one else has anything at this moment. There's two alternative, this is the most important aspect to this park in my mind. There's two alternatives given, and not a whole lot of discussion after that, on the restoration plan. Page 17, 16, and then it continues on page 17. The alternatives on the restoration, and one basically is to manipulate the hydrology to increase wetlands. The other is to basically keep it the way it is as far as the size of the lake and the wetlands. And that's something I think is very important that this committee addresses. The reason it's very important, to a lot of people, the lake is important. They've lived there for years. They've seen it as a gravel pit. They've seen it restored to an extent, restored, and they like the idea of the lake. So, if we start shrinking that lake, and remember, this is in a non-scientific approach, but this is what you're going to hear from people. You shrink the lake and create more swamp. That's not what they want to see. if you get the credentials of the people that came up with this idea, in their playground, that's a good idea, because that's what they're schooled in, that's what they would like to see. But you know, they gave the two options, but I think it's very important that this committee or the county board says we're going to proceed on one option or another, because that's going to open it up to a whole different science.
What was their proposition to draw down a foot and a half, something like that?
4 feet.
Or 4 feet.
Yeah.
Well, that was to create a buffer zone, correct?
To create various types of wetlands. Yeah. If you read through their whole report.
Yeah, right? Sure.
So, I mean, I want to bring that up because I think that's the first thing we have to address before you go any further.
Mr. Chairman, just a quick question. So what you're saying is that the aesthetics, or at least, would change by drawing it down, and people are looking to, because they like the lake the way it is. I mean, the lake is aesthetically pleasing.
Correct.
And if you create wetlands, you're taking some of that aesthetically pleasing looks to it and making it more for wildlife and animals and whatever else
yeah.
grows around there. But it doesn't look as pretty as it does if you have a lake.
Well, I think you have to get the perception of what's pretty to who.
Right.
And to the people that want to create these wetlands, the wetlands are pretty,
right.
very pretty. And different grasses are very pretty. And if you really read this report, I can agree. You know, but the people that paid $2 million so far in tax dollars for this land kind of like the lake. So I don't want the people that sat on the Green Ribbon Committee and the people that created this report to decide for our taxpayers what we do with that land. There's plenty that we can do that goes along with their recommendations that would still include keeping the water level where it is. The other thing, and again, living where I live, there's numerous ponds and water resources that are affected by what we do with that. There's a pond directly to the west of us that I get numerous comments from when we're draining the KD, when we're running our, if you drive along Highway KD, just below our dam, there's a water flow that we let pressure in and out. And when we draw that down, his pond drops 3 feet. And there's a couple other landowners around that they're affected by it. So that's another aspect of that drawing down.
The thing Mr. Chairman, is that the Green Ribbon Committee, that's probably the one point that when the environmental scientist, Mark, brought that whole proposal up, I don't know that the Green Ribbon Committee definitely didn't take a strong stand like, boy, we're behind this 100%, this is, you know, what they were recommending.
Right.
I think it was probably the one thing that, as a committee, most folks didn't fully comprehend what the impacts would be.
I don't think they did either, and that's where they left it kind of blank here, because after that, it's never mentioned again. And to me, that's the most important thing on that whole piece of property, is what you do with that. You know,
its impact, like you say, it goes even beyond the property.
The impact's huge.
Yeah.
And then we went to zip lines. You know,
right.
I mean, this is very important.
So the only thing that I would offer, I guess, is if we want to get additional information on that piece, because I know that he was, Mark explained, you know, and some of the logic to a layperson made sense as far as the buffering and how it would benefit the lake in terms of creating a more gradual slope and a better habitat for the fish, and you know, and actually improve that.
Right.
But you know how it affected, you know, creating more boggy area, and you know, and what was going to. So the only thing I would offer is if we want to focus on that, because it is a key element, if it makes sense to have him come in and at least explain stuff in more detail, I'm sure we could do that.
It probably wouldn't hurt, because truthfully, I don't think I'm over exaggerating how. That I think that's the most important thing in this whole study. So, and I could see where the Green Ribbon Committee was, you know, very happy, and they had spent a lot of time. But a recommendation on that, I mean, all they did was give a analysis of either,
you know, yeah, A or B, yeah,
kind A of. Or B, and then we go into a whole lot more pages. So, I think that's very important, and you know, there's other items, but we can spend, you know, a certain amount of time at various meetings on this.
Like I said, I'd offer that, and then if it makes sense at our next meeting, well, you know, depending on what's on the schedule, if it makes sense to have him come down and just talk about those two options in more detail, so everybody understands kind of what the pros and cons are, that'd be fine.
Any other discussion this evening?
Just to dovetail on that, if there is some thoughts of having water turbine generation, this whole lake level thing would play into that, so I don't know if we could have some type of feedback from...
It's wind turbine that everybody's worried about.
Well, I know they're talking about the biomass, wind, solar, geothermal, and water. Water. So, I mean, if there's a possibility of having someone address that situation as to the lake level, if that even have effect. How below the lake level is that gate anyway?
John, how low is that right now? The gate below kind of the level that we maintain.
From the top of the dam, I would probably say 50 feet.
Okay.
It's not that outlet's not that deep.
No.
To dewater it.
I'll just bring up one other thing before you leave. I'm sure you want to keep our meeting going. This is quite a unique concept when you look at a park with the rustic, beautiful natural character that it has, and it really has that as a strong asset. It was there for the Meyer materials, it's now here's the county park. I think it's a rather novel approach. I don't know of any other place I can think of where it's been done to say, okay, now we're going to incorporate high tech things here in terms of demonstration centers. That's one of the things we talked about. So I think just from a very broad standpoint, every member of this committee should have a certain comfort level within the committee, within yourselves, that we can agree upon, yes, we can maintain the rustic character. We're not going to put slides and swings and teeter-totters and, you know, climbing gymnasiums. We're going to keep it in that regard. But yet we're welcoming in an entirely different element, which will be technology, very, very, very current, maybe even cutting-edge technology. And that's quite a dichotomy, and I think we all have to be comfortable with that as a committee to recommend it to others. So that should be for a future meeting.
Anything else this evening? Anybody want to discuss on the park? So Ray might not be next meeting, but if you talk to this individual, I'm sure everybody's really looked at this, but there was a couple areas. Well, it's page 52 and 53. We wouldn't get into this evening, but these are the recommendations that we were given. And another real important area for me is the exclusions, which are on page 24. So if you want to, you know, pay a little extra attention to that, we could, we'll just have this on the agenda, Ray, for our next meeting, and we'll spend time, or we won't, you know, depending on who we can, if you have that gentleman there. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, we'll still have discussion on it. So if everyone just wants to continue bringing this to the next meeting, we'll go from there. Go on to new business parks. Mr. Rudy.
First thing we have is a resolution to accept a grant from the River Milwaukee Foundation Fund in Michigan to assist with the dam removal in Bedtime Springs Park and to install a bridge in its place and also to restore the stream banks in the immediate area. We've been notified that we are received $234,000 for this project. In the 2012 budget, we had $520,000 budgeted for the project. The current estimate with a few changes that had to be made to the bridge, and that the budget figure changed to $627,000. So I guess what this resolution is for is permission to accept that grant.
Any questions or discussion? If not, Supervisor Frederick.
Motion to approve.
Moved by Supervisor Frederick to approve. For a second.
I'll second.
Second by Supervisor Getz. On the motion, any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Youth and Governance? Unanimous.
Having the season. Starting the season. Then we'll come out.
So, Jim, do you have something for us to sign on this one? It's coming around.
Are you collecting all the sign ones?
No, right there.
Yeah, I would. Okay. Stuck in them. Yeah. There should be one. Yeah. Okay, John, you can keep going.
Okay. The next resolution, this one we submit every year, and I've been submitting this one since as long as I've been here, which is at least 38 years. This is state money to fund the state portion of the Kenosha County Public Snowmobile Trail, of which it funds about 77 miles. This pays for all the maintenance on the trail and the grooming, which is done by the Kenosha County Snowmobile Alliance. What we are, the County Parks Department, is just a funnel for these funds to pay this money out to the Alliance for their land acquisition and maintenance. It comes to
$19,225.
Mr. Chairman, good question.
Yes, sir. So what happens now, like this year, when there's not a whole lot of snow?
In the past, at the end of the year, the snowmobile alliance actually does probably $5,000 or $6,000 more in maintenance than this funds. And that's why they fundraise. But they can, if the money isn't there for grooming and on the trail, someone will go to that. If the money doesn't get used, it goes back.
Okay. Thank you.
The money comes from registration fees, so it's all money just from the snowmobile people.
You know, they can buy additional signs and do some other work with that money. To get it done before the end of the season.
Do we have any motion?
Make a motion
to approve. Motion approved. Seconded. Motion by Supervisor Esposito. Seconded by Supervisor Grady. All those in favor?
Aye.
Youth and Governance? Parks Ordinance First Amendment, is that next?
That one, Chairman, will be presented by Mr. Cardamone from Park Council.
Okay. That's news to me. Committee members, I can tell you that I did not draft this and did not come overly prepared. I can advise you that in speaking with Mr. Vash, it's my understanding that the ordinance essentially is designed to simply codify what has been the practice of the county, as well as the advice of the Corporation Counsel's Office in past years in regards to the balancing that needs to be undertaken in regards to, on the one hand, the use of the county property. And obviously there was comments during the public comment portion of the meeting in regards to this, and balancing that against the constitutional rights that are inherent under the First Amendment, particularly that of freedom of speech. There are obviously there is that balancing test that has to be undertaken, and specifically there is a number of or a series of cases and case law that deal with the use of public property for free speech or free speech purposes, and what appropriate restrictions and controls can be placed depending on generally the type of facility or property that's being questioned. So again, I didn't draft it. In fact, I don't even have it in front of me. But it is my understanding that essentially the intent here is simply to codify what has been the practice, as well as the advice of the Corporation Counsel's Office.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I can give you maybe a little practical background on this, too, is that when this question first got raised was when it was, I believe it was for the Recall Wirch petitions started, and there was folks in some of the public areas, the park specifically, engaging in some different things, blocking the entrances. There were some other things going on, and we didn't know how to handle it. So we asked the Corporation Council then, you know, what are the boundaries? What are the rules on this stuff? And that's when Bernie Vosch had issued the initial opinion on how we should handle those situations. And kind of the simple interpretation is that folks, they're considered public spaces under the recent, I don't know how recent it is, but the most recent Supreme Court decisions. Public parks are considered public spaces, and therefore you are very limited in what it is you can restrict from taking place there, as long as folks aren't, harassing other folks or blocking their ability to get and make use of the public facilities. They're pretty much there. They can have their signs and wave them and do whatever they'd like to do. But one of the caveats is they can't stick them in the ground. They can't mount them on any of the park's facilities or anything like that. So they can't give the appearance that the county endorses whatever it is they're doing. But by the same token, if they want to be there doing their thing, as long as they're not hurting anybody and they've got their message out, we can't restrict that. If we do, then we are encroaching on their First Amendment rights. So that's the practical direction that John and I put in place. And when that happened, well, then lo and behold, 6 months later or whatever, then it flipped the other way around, and then it was the recall, the governor stuff, and this issue came up again. And as Mr. Bean referenced, there was issues that happened in Brighton, not in any of the parks, but it was at Brighton, actually, at the township at their transfer station, their dump that the folks use every weekend to take care of their waste. But what it caused, I think, was Supervisor Rose then noticed there was an inconsistency in the park ordinance as it's written now in light of the most recent Supreme Court decisions. There's some inconsistencies. And so Bernie took the opinion he gave us 6 months prior and said, basically, we probably should put this in place and clean up the ordinance so it reflects and it needs to be consistent with the most recent Supreme Court cases. And that's what, when Supervisor Rose brought this to Bernie, that's what this was an attempt to do, was to clean that up.
Right.
And that's kind of where we're at. It got brought to the committee because this is the vehicle. I believe the chairman referred it to the Public Works Committee to take a look at, but I think that's the history on it, how it got here.
Any questions or discussion? Supervisor Grady.
I'm in firm support of this proposed ordinance. I think it's totally in keeping with our free society, the ability to assemble, the ability of free speech. I think, as you pointed out, the last sentence of the last paragraph is probably one of those poignant. However, no such sign, banner, set, or may be erected upon, posted upon park property. So we're not using the parks or the county as a public staging area to say we choose one side or the other, and that has to do with the posting permanently. But as long as you're there, you can carry a banner, you can say your 2 cents. I think that's part of the way this society should be. So I'll support it as it's read. Thank you.
Anyone else? Supervisor.
You just have a question. I'm in support of the ordinance as well, but just from my own knowledge, as far as when does something cross the line, as far as once it becomes harassment to somebody trying to do at the park, and somebody's out there for whatever side you're on trying to politicize something, or how long can somebody, do we have anything on the books how long somebody can be out there 24 hours with a tent? Or I'm just curious, so, you know, if anybody ever calls me and asks. Or...
From a practical standpoint, what John and I, taking Bernie's interpretation, what we've done is, you know, obviously when the park's closed, they're not allowed to be out there. So it would only be in the hours that the park is open. And if folks are out there collecting petitions or trying to get some message out, they're not allowed to go up. In the case of at Old Settlers Park, folks were initially going up and harassing folks as they were taking. They were just there taking their dogs for a walk. And folks would come up, and we instructed them, if you want to set up your deal, you can set it up over there. If folks want to come and check out and see what it is that you have to say, that's great. But you can't go and get in their face as they're walking just trying to get their doggy out for a walk. And they can't physically block the entrance or exit to the park in an attempt to get their message to that person too. So they're free to set up their own deal. They can, if they want to put signs on their vehicle, there's nothing they can do about that. But as soon as they stick them into the ground or put them on the buildings or the fences, that's not going to be allowed. So those are kind of the practical guidelines that we've put in place.
Anyone else? It's basically to clarify to our staff. It was already on our books, but it's to clarify a lot of follow. We have a motion to approve this.
Motion.
Moved by Supervisor Brady, seconded by Supervisor Esposito. Any further discussion? Not all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Youth and Governance?
Aye.
Unanimous? Thank you. Yep.
The next resolution is to approve a budget modification to accept $75,000 from our insurance company to pay for the Kemper road repairs.
That's it.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I just wanted to ask on that last resolution, did you in your packet get an actual resolution that's got a signature page with Supervisor Rose's in?
No.
Okay. Continue with, then I'll go get that.
Okay.
I'll make a motion.
Okay. Move to approve the resolution to repair the, on the repairs of the Kemper Center roof. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Youth and Governance?
Aye.
Unanimous. Thank you, Mr. Root. Yeah. Yep. Monthly activities.
All right. I attached the most recent Pringle Nature Minute, or Pringle Nature Center minutes and financial report and things. Your packet. Petrifying Springs Road by Dan and Dam removal update. I believe we're in a, with the dam removal of the bridge, we're right at just a few minor changes to the bridge design. They submitted their final ones and there's a couple small things with it as far as picking out colors and pattern for the stones. Stonework. The roadway, we did see preliminary plans in January and made changes, and we still are making small changes as far as where water lines run underneath the roadway and just a bunch of small things about the gates at the entrances and that sort of thing. But everything looks like it'll be bid out, should be on track to start this whole project with the dam and the roadway probably by June 1st. And they intend to start, the road project will start just off of JR with Area 1 to begin with to complete that so folks can still will be able to get in, get water and from the well and use it off our the youth ice fishing derby, the weather didn't cooperate, so that was a bust. We had a lot of good sponsors, a lot of good prizes, had a large amount of volunteers lined up, and huge interest in it. And we just didn't have the ice, so there's a lot of disappointed folks with that one. But we're going to try again next year. or February if you have to do the same event. And I'm already working right now with the volunteers and Tom Carrier to put together a summer youth fishing derby out there. See if we can get that one done probably maybe at the end of June. Silver Lake Trail update, we met with the DNR around the end of January, and it was a pretty good meeting. They spoke to us mainly about taking and making changes to the trail as far as wind and bridge requirements and things like that, and reduce our cost enormously. I mean, it went from what we assumed or what we were looking at was probably going to be close to $500,000 down to I believe right around $300,000. That's a big trail with box culvert instead of a bridge at the Silver Lake Park border, and then a reduced, as far as capacity wise, bridge on that second opening that's to the west of there. Kemper roof updates, pretty much were was waiting for this resolution to go through. The roofer just got finished his paperwork to us that would require the purchasing required to get started. So once this is approved by the county board, he'll get on those roofs. And he said that once he gets up there, he figures that if everything goes well with the weather, it'll be done. Old Settlers Dog Park. There's been a lot of folks asking about lighting up these dog parks so in the winter months they can use them until the park closes. So I called Lee Energies, and the folks there, when I talked to Dennis Arbogast, I asked him about the chances of putting light fixtures on the backside of some of their poles, just on the west side of, or south side of the cyclone fence next to the dog park. And he said they would put those fixtures up for us on four of the poles, and the total charge, their total monthly charge for those lights would be $61 a month, which would be paid by the dog parks. There's no installation charge. There's no other fees included with that. I spoke with the village. They're okay with it as long as there's no light pollution across the lake or to the neighbors. And they're the same style light fixture as you see there now. They call it a cobra down directing light. So you get off in the distance, you don't see that glare. So I think I haven't received the contract agreement from them yet to look at to do this, but it sounds like we probably will. I asked if there, by chance, if they had LEDs, and he said next year they may have something like that available, but not at this point. These are still the sodium high pressure ones, these lights. And that's all I have.
Any questions for Mr. Rudy? I have one, John. The signs for the dog parks. I don't know if the ones in Kenosha or not, but there is one out of Katy there.
Or at this is the final one.
Well, yeah. Is there going to be one of our permanent signs?
I've been waiting on Doc Carlisle. Maryland, the Close family, just to take the design for theirs. And I've been waiting on Dr. Carlisle. We gave him a bunch of designs to kind of get ideas. Well, then he's got somebody, a friend or someone else that's doing a design for him, and I haven't received it. And I finally come to the conclusion I'm just going to have to take the Close sign design in and have it made, and then I'll just do Dr. Carlisle's later because I just haven't received it from him yet.
Yeah, because it just looks cheap.
They're going to be
shabby out there at the
out by us. 4x6, 4 foot high, 6 foot wide sign, a nice post with copper caps, two sided.
Right.
So you can see it coming either direction.
No, I know we do a nice job on our signs, but if it's going to be another 6 months, I'd say we either take that. that one down. Or, what, planning and development did that, right? It's just on a machine. Just do another one that you can read. It's seen its better days.
Yep.
A couple of years.
Just a follow-up question, if I may. Is there lighting currently at Pets for Dog Park? If there were to arise similar request, would it be possible to change it there? Or what's your
yes. We have had that request. So along the roadway, the electric and water closest to the dog park is in that pavilion right across the roadway of the Alabama. So we're going to run the wiring and the water, and they're bringing fountain up there.
Anything else for Mr. Rudy? Thank you, Jack. So we're going to move on to golf. And we've got Resolution 80 and 79. Prior to that, we're going to have a PowerPoint presentation. The two resolutions, when brought forward, put some people to work as far as coming together on some ideas on what we can do with these golf courses. Everyone realizes that something needs to be done. Some of the problems aren't going away. Some can be naturally attacked in different ways, but Mr. Dreyer, Ray, the county board chairman, myself, the county executive, we put in quite a bit of time and Jim to come up with some options here for the committee and some ideas to bring this forward, to get it hopefully to a point where we don't have to address this yearly. We come up with a plan that everyone can live with. So, Dan, I don't know, are you going to do the presentation?
We're going to double team it.
Right, with Jim. And then there's going to be plenty of time for discussion here on the proposals that you will see come forward. So.
Mr. Chairman, right. I just wanted to give a little bit of a roadmap on page 2, Jim. One of the things, because it had been brought up, either formally or informally, about folks. You know, some folks, as we've heard already tonight, just in citizen comments, there's passion on both sides. There's passion of, you know, close them, whatever, regardless of everything else, close them. And then you've got folks on the other side very passionate about keep them open because of all the value they bring to the community. That said, some of the things that also came up were, you know, why can't the county just sell that property and or look seriously at selling it and what's involved in that? So we thought at least helpful, before we even delve into the options and some of the things to take into consideration when looking at this, is just to give kind of an overview, a legal perspective on what could we do if we really did want to sell the property. And that's why Joe is here from the Corporation Counsel's office, just to provide at least some insight into that. Because, like I say, the questions have come in the past, and they've definitely come up recently. Why does the county just consider selling that or developing it? So Joe is going to give that before we jump into. Then we're going to step back to a little bit of just kind of where we've come in the last couple of years with golf, and then delve into the two resolutions at hand.
Thank you. It was almost 50 years ago that the county entered into an agreement with, amongst others, the state to help fund the purchase of the land that has now become that golf course. And so I've had the opportunity to review the that agreement. And remarkably, even though there have been changes in the statutes and the numbering of the statutes, the bottom line is that under that agreement, Kenosha County has agreed that we would not sell or dispose of this property and would not in any way enter into any arrangement which would defeat the purposes set forth without the approval of the state of Wisconsin, and the proceeds from the sale or other disposal shall be used to promote those same objectives. And essentially, those objectives are that this was meant to fund what's referred to as outdoor recreational, an outdoor recreational area or outdoor recreational activities. So, I mean, I could bore you by going into a lot of stuff about the statutes and how they've developed and so forth, but the bottom line is, if we were going to even consider anything other than keeping it in-house, we'd have to, A, get permission from the state to do so, and B, even if we were to sell it or otherwise somehow dispose of that property with the state's blessing, we would continue to have to use it for some type of outdoor recreational activity. This is not a situation where we could, pop a for sale sign up and then turn it into condos. That's simply not an option that we have under the agreement that we entered into.
Okay. All right, proceed.
We thought we'd talk a little bit before we get into the two resolutions about some of the progress, the accomplishments we've had involved. Technology has been a big part of the success the last couple of years. We've implemented a new active golf point of sale system. 2012, this year, will be the third year. The system is giving us better and more accurate sales and inventory information. We can see what's selling daily, weekly, and monthly. It's resulting in better margins and stock control. We know what the sales price is, less the cost. We know what the margins are. If we have stock left over, we'll move it quickly as we can. We are not operating out of a cigar box. The technology is there that can tell us where the finances are for the golf course every day. We've also implemented Kronos timekeeping system, providing us with better and more accurate labor information. There's information that's visible through the system, so we can see who's in a clubhouse, who's on premise, what they're doing daily and weekly. We don't have to wait for a time card to be entered, transferred over from someplace else. It goes in when they sign in. We saved in payroll. It's become more efficient in the use of employee hours. We started the system in the middle of 2011. 2012 will be the first full year, and the information has been very helpful to us. And another thing was a combined effort of the finance people, the golf people, the IT people. A lot of people put a lot of time in. We all work together to make this successful.
We believe we have improved the guest experience at the golf courses, not only through technology. I mean, our lines are considerably shorter, where we have a lot quicker processing of the people to play golf. We also have the email blasts, we have the websites, we have the online tee times, we have the ability to make our guests more welcome there. We've done training. Trained both the inside staff and the outside staff to be more courteous. I think with the technology increases, with the improvements in the equipment that we have better offerings in the food and beverage area. So a lot of customer service upgrades that we've done. We've paved some of the cart paths last year, and now we have plans in 2012 to pave the white, and then hopefully in 2013 we'll be paving the blue golf course. So that'll be a huge improvement. The irrigation improvements that we've made so far, especially at Petrifying Springs, have really put the golf course there in a lot better condition. We are making improvements on the white 18 this year, so hopefully the conditions on white will be much improved and much easier to maintain. And then in 2013, we'd like to do the blue. The manicured, the greens, fairways, and tees, as you heard tonight, the course conditions are in so much better shape than they were previously. And we have overall healthier turf and better playing conditions from the things that we've been doing. So we feel that we've improved the guest experience.
The golf courses are surviving in a down economy. Because of the systems, there have been fiscal controls implemented and cost savings. There's a heightened awareness of watching the numbers closer and in a more timely manner. There's more inventory controls in place, watching margins, moving slow selling stock, payroll and personnel controls due to the technology of implementation of Kronos. The payroll dollars are down 2010 to 11, and they will be down 12 also. There's just a change in culture of the golf operations. More by the numbers. I don't know if professional is the best way to use, but there's more techniques, more tools that they have available in order to better run the golf courses. Rugdale Red Knot. We're going to talk about three different options. Option one is that the courses would remain open, but change their operating methodology slightly to mostly in the maintenance area, due to a few of the details. Option two is Resolution 80, which I have to read that.
No.
Has everyone seen it?
No.
Resolution 80 calls for closing down the Red Nine with no golf operations, similar to what happened at Fillmore, I think in Lake Geneva. Option three would be to close down the Red Nine, but enhance the practice facility.
In order to change the operating methodology, what we were thinking about was having an additional offering to help create more golfers in the area. By reducing rates for nine holes, we charge $15 now. We're thinking about $10 to $12. And for 18 holes, we charge $26. And for the Red Nine, we're thinking $18 to $20, having an additional offering. And then to offset the reduced revenue, we would also offset it by changing the maintenance philosophies. We'd change the mowing philosophy so that the greens would be mowed 5 days a week instead of seven. They'd be mowed at a higher cut of height so that there's less stress on the greens and they require less detailed maintenance for it, especially hand watering. We would reduce the definition of the cut. We would go from the fairway to the rough and not have an intermediate cut. We would rake the bunkers less often. We would reduce the frequency and the duration of the watering over there. We would. This one would be the one of the biggest things, is we would reduce the length of the season on the red. We would open the white and then the blue, and then maybe toward the 1st of May, we would open the red up. And then, again, right at the end of September, we'd be closing the red down, and we'd have less months that we'd have to maintain the red. There'd be less attention to detail there. We wouldn't blow the leaves or the clippings, and we would repair the divots on the tees less often. So all of this, we're hoping for, you know, a significant reduction in the maintenance costs that would offset any reductions in the fees that we collect over there.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
Question. Can you pull back that slide again?
Sure.
I looked at that information. I think it sounds pretty good, but some of the reductions of some of the care, do you think it make the golf, at least the holes that we're reducing the care on, would it make it less visibly attractive if we kind of reduce the maintenance on those, do you think?
Yes, I do think it would. You know, and that's why we're talking about doing this specifically just on the Red Nine. We would have the offering of the white and the blue 18s. If people want that pristine, that nicer experience and are willing to pay for it. And then we would have another offering, you know, the Red Nine, that would be less expensive for people to play, but it would also be maintained to a lesser degree.
Okay. Thank you.
This next slide is going to show that also.
Okay.
Yeah, we're really still talking about the first option of Red Nine open, everyone's playing golf, but we cut back. The positives of cutting back and changing the operating methods, we will have an expense savings on an annual basis, about $47,000. That's net. We're going to save some maintenance money, either labor or materials or whatever, but we're also going to be having less revenue because we'll be charging less, so that's a net savings of $47,000. Another positive is we'll retain the golf experience for the youth or the inexperienced, which is where a lot of them go to red nine when they play it right now. Allocating fixed costs for more holes. There are fixed costs with running the breakdown. Right now we're spreading that over 45 holes. And fixed costs are things like paying upkeep for the clubhouse, paying for Dan, paying for Dave, paying this, and other things that don't change regardless of the number of holes that you have. So we're able to allocate those fixed costs over more holes if there are more holes that are open. We can speed up the play on the white and blue because we can shuffle some of these golfers to the red. And it also provides us extra capacity for leagues and outings, and that is some of the most profitable times we have at the golf course. Negatives, we're looking at irrigation repairs on the red nine. If it stays open and we have to repair all of it, about $534,000. There's also deferred maintenance that would have to sooner or later be done for the red nine. This is things like fixing bunkers, fixing greens, tees, some of those things that haven't been done for many years that are under radar that should be repaired. That's another $733,000. And to the point of the gentleman from Youth and Governance, there is a perception that if we do reduce the quality, that it might hurt the reputation of the course, or people might think that the course isn't as good.
Thank you.
On the next page, you'll see it's the map of the current configuration of the red nine. That's outlined in red, and then the current practice facility has an outline of the yellow dashes. So again, it's keeping the current course configuration and practice range, providing less facility maintenance. That's option number one.
Option number two, this is really resolution number 80. Again, we are closing the golf course. There's no golf course operations. It goes to seed. There's a net savings of $112,000 a year in expenses. This is the same number that was in the Carthage study that was run at the finance department. We all kind of came up with the same number. Again, it's a net savings of partial loss in revenue versus savings in maintenance expenses. So we would have savings of $112,000 a year. There we would have two more positives. They're negatives on the other version, but here they're positives. We would save the $534,000 in irrigation. We would save the $733,000 in deferred maintenance. And we would be able to reallocate staff time of existing people to different, possibly more value-added activities. Those are the positives. On the negative side, we would be allocating these fixed expenses for fewer holes. There's also a loss of scheduling flexibility and extra capacity for outings and leagues when you have nine less holes. It's a loss of a training ground for youth 30-meter golfers. We'll have to put them onto the blue and white course. As a result, this could slow play and could increase maintenance over the current levels that we have on the white and blue courses. And there could be, again, all these, there could be an increase in parks maintenance expenses. We're not using the red course. There are some cart paths and things out there we might want to mull for bike trails or hiking trails or whatever we else we might choose to do with that land. But basically, it's not doing anything.
Next page is the option two, closing of holes 1 through 9 and allowing the natural vegetation regrowth. Use and maintain the current practice facility. So the yellow area is maintaining the existing practice area. All the red crossed out areas would be areas that would return to natural vegetation. Also, just wanted to point out how close it is to the clubhouse and what kind of views you might get from that.
And then before you move to the next one, so the committee knows, on option two, that nine holes of golf is directly touching the existing park property and the existing ball field. So that would just automatically be taken over by the park. And the trails and things, or the car paths that we had to pave this year would be part of the hiking trails and things through the park. Okay.
Option three. Closing the Red 9 as we know it, enhancing the existing driving range and establishing three practice holes. And I'm just going to jump ahead to the map, as I think we might want to just explain this map real quick.
On option three of the map, it shows that you're closing the holes and allowing natural vegetation regrowth in the red checked or crossed areas, and then expanding the current practice facility and creating three practice holes. So if you look at the map on number three, it shows everything in green there, including the existing practice range would develop into new practice facilities. Our current range has got 9 matted tees, and really is lacking for a 36 or 45 hole facility. And in this area, we would create almost an acre of grass tees so people could actually hit off grass, have a longer and wider range with target greens in there, and then also 3 practice holes within that area shaded in green.
$47,000 because this could not be opened up in the first year. So we wouldn't have any additional revenues either. And in the second year, if we did so, if we constructed it, we should have net savings of $75,000 because we don't have to maintain all of the old Red 9, but the revenue should start to build up. And we just put a conservative estimate in of $15,000 the first year, $35,000, $40,000, $45,000. So the net savings or revenue would be an increase over the first 5 years of $482,000. So those are the three options just from the effect on the P&L, the revenue less expenses.
Any questions at this point? We'll save them. Go ahead.
The top management was asked to make a recommendation to the administration and this committee, or the finance committee, or the county board on what they felt they would do. And the recommendation is not to close the Red 9 in 2012. Current year budget calls for the Red 9 to be open. It would be needed for leagues and outings for sure. There would be a change in operating methodologies for 2012 to save as much money as possible. $47,000 a year is the you should be able to save, if not more. The golf management would take this year to develop a plan for the advancement or an enhanced range and new practice holes. If none of those plans are finalized, they'd have to spend some time working that out with the architects and develop future plans for scheduling the course, what they would do without the Red 9. Then in 2013, the Red 9 would be closed forever, and the construction of the range and the new practice holes would take place. That would cost $495,000 in 2013, and there would be a net savings of $772,000. Because we would not have to do the Red 9 irrigation or all the enhancements that we're looking at. So the recommendation of golf management is not to adopt Resolution 80 as it is.
Now we'll open up for some questions, if there are any. Questions or opinions? Yeah.
We've looked at, I spent countless hours looking at velocity studies, and now we have another presentation on golf, and all these papers look warm and fuzzy, but at the end of the day, golf loses money. Bottom line, ever since I've been here and beyond. So, I can appreciate the I can appreciate the numbers. I can appreciate the positive and negatives. But at the end of the day, it's a loser. And I can guarantee that when we sit back here next year and go through this whole thing, it's going to be the weather, it's going to be this, it's going to be that, and golf's lost money. Constituents in my area, taxpayers, are tired of seeing that. This is where my big problem comes in. I said this before. This is the big white elephant in the room, and nobody wants to take it on. I appreciate the aspect of golf being part of the overall recreational approval of environment for people and so on and so forth, but, even the velocity study that I read through on more than one occasion, these recommendations are in my mind, common sense, of maybe it's because I'm a business owner and I look at things that, as a business aspect and models and things like that, but, nothing really jumped out at me that said, hey, this is going to solve our problem, the problem continues, and I may be wrong, but even before Dan got here, golf was a problem. That's why we brought Dan in, to fix the problem. Has he done a good or
adequate job? I believe so, with what he's got to work with. But, you know, I don't know if there was creative accounting or so on and so forth, but golf's always been a loser, you know? So if you can wrap your mind around that and take that day in and day out, you know, I guess some of this stuff sounds all right. But to me, it's just, it's more print on paper. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's going to lose money, you know? So, you know, you got to stop the bleeding somewhere, somehow. And you know, I don't believe it's keeping things open. I got to agree with Supervisor Rose when he said on the county board floor, it's a no-win proposition. It's a bad business model. You know, and it's unfortunate, but that's what we got to deal with. So, I think all this stuff is great, but, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I think we're avoiding the situation to make the hard decision that, you gotta save costs. You know, I mean, I guess my question to Dan is, is there a golfer that's not going to come and golf there because there's 36 holes versus 45 holes? I mean, in your mind, if I was a golfer, I would say, I'm not going to Brightdale because, you know what, they only have 36 holes. You know, I just can't buy that. You know, you got two 18s. I understand. I get the aspect of, with the red nine being open, that increases the speed of play. You know, I understand that. I didn't get that. But I don't think that, I mean, I commend you and your staff. There isn't a person that, since I've been a county board supervisor, I haven't had one person say to me that the greens or the atmosphere was subpar. Everybody said it's fantastic. You know, that's commendable. I commend you for that. But I just don't think that there's one, that you're going to lose 50% of golfers. You know, we're having a problem keeping the course full now. You know? So I guess that's my question. It is, are you going to lose that many golfers because there's nine less holes? Yeah.
Our projections are that we would lose 30% of the rounds and revenue that we made on the Red Nine in 2011 if we closed it down. 70% would go to either the white or the blue, but 30% of the rounds and the revenue that we created on the Red Nine in 2011 would be lost if we closed it down.
Okay, so you'd lose 30% in operating cost. I mean, where does this come down? We're going to lose 30%.
Okay. That's the net $112,000 that we save by closing
okay.
it down. That's
okay.
That's that number.
All right. Thank you. That's all I have.
Anyone else? Supervisor Getz.
First of all, I want to compliment you for putting this plan together. I think it looks to me as though there's been a lot of thought processes put into it. I think when we talked about, I know during the budget process, we certainly talked enough about golf and how we were going to become hopefully at least break even for this year. I would hate to see us take a step of closing the Red Nine, when obviously we've thought through a lot of good things for the year of 2012 through the budget process and through some of the things that the new Crone system, all of the things that you put in place to help make us more profitable than what we were. So I think we really need to give that a chance. I'm not in favor of closing the Red Nine for this year. I like the idea of looking at putting in a bigger practice facility. I think that we talked about baby boomers, and those are the people that we're going to be catering to in the next 10 years. And golf is probably a great opportunity for those people to come out and relax and do things. I think that golf is a business, but it's also part of our community. And when we had our gentleman who gave us our
presentation on our parks plan for the next 20 years, he certainly talked about golf, and he certainly said that that's a part of our community, and that's something that we need to preserve and to have available, just like we have parks and ball diamonds and swimming places and everything else. So it's a business, but it's also something that we as a county offer to our community, to economic development, to bring in other people to our community, and we need to offer those kind of things. So all in all, I like your plan. I like the idea of keeping the Red 9, cutting back on the expenses for this year. Let's take a look at it at the end of the year, but it also gives us this year to take a look at planning for 2013, see if the practice facility is an option, see if that's the best route to go, and then go on from there. So I'm in favor of your recommendation.
Just a question. Their recommendation is to close it for 2012.
No.
Or no, I mean to close it for 2013.
Right.
Right. Okay. Supervisor Grady?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim, spin us back to 12, would you, please? Take a look at this on the positives. Net savings, $772. Ready irrigation, $9,534. Deferred, $733. And the final point, $495. This would all be once option 3 was in place. Is that correct?
Yes.
This really does not apply to the 2012 season. Am I correct? So for 2012, with your projection savings of $47,000, are you still planning on maintaining irrigation at the course?
It would be maintained to the level that it would still operate.
Is there any intention of adding infrastructure to the irrigation as it is on the red course?
Not at all. No.
What would be the time frame for construction of the practice facility once it was started? How long would it take to do that?
I don't really have that information. I consulted with Loman just on a very brief couple phone calls to get numbers for everybody and just general ideas. I don't have figures on what it would take to actually construct the 3 practice holes or expand the range.
General terms, as compared to the other courses, the 2 18-hole courses, white and blue, proportionately wise, what does it take to maintain the Red 9 in terms of both irrigation and mowing schedules? You know, if the whole thing's 100%, what percentage does the Red 9 consume of that?
The irrigation is... I'd like to say 40%, 40 to 45%, because the white and the blue have irrigation that was constructed in 1990. The red irrigation was just constructed in 1970, so it's 40 to 45%. We figured about $70,000 just to maintain it, and then mowing of the whole property. It is the biggest 9 holes, the longest 9 holes that we have, plus it's the most open. It doesn't have as much woods on the red 9 as the white or the blue or even petrifying springs. So overall, at Brightdale, we would probably spend 30 to 35% mowing the red compared to the rest of, I'll say 30% compared to the other 4 9s.
Those are my questions.
Chairman Malinaro.
Stand up because I can't see everybody. I have a moment with my stand. A couple of things I wanted to talk about. I touched on a little bit. I've got some notes as I was writing as we went. But one of the things that was borne out in the velocity study, maybe not specifically as a comparison that I'll make, but certainly the multiplier effect of having golf courses and what that does to buy 100% of the projection or you want to back that off to some degree or for that matter enhance it, you can certainly make that choice. But I think generally the information and the data that went into providing that calculation is pretty sound. So as I see it, you've got a couple of options, and they're limited options. And that's based on what we heard from Corporation Council this evening. We can mothball that whole property. I don't think getting rid of the Red 9 is a problem. You're probably losing, and I would defer to the golf professionals in the room here, the 30% you're losing probably is the 30% many golf courses wouldn't mind if they moved on, so to speak. At the same time, I'm not convinced that's the 30% that you ever want to lose if you're looking at the bigger picture. But understanding what we can do with that property, either mothball 9 holes or all five of the 9 holes, and you're going to end up with a cost. So let's assume for a minute we're going to get rid of the entire Brightondale property. All the golf holes, we're just going to turn it into parkland. I would argue that you will lose significant value. We heard at the last council meeting, I recognize it. Opposition in April, correct? I've been there before. So, in fact, the last 4 terms, I think, I've had opposition. I'll make this decision based on what is in the best interest of Kenosha County and the taxpayers as a whole. And I hope that we all do that, and not whether or not it's going to play right come April 3rd. I didn't agree at all with the statements that were made about KD Park by one of the candidates at the last county board meeting. The reason I didn't agree is because he cherry-picked a couple of topics on an issue that was published online that I know, after spending months, Supervisor Edelman, Mr. Arpin, many of the people in the room, months on this plan, that you simply can't cherry pick. I'll go and knock at any door and say that we are not spending $14 million on a park in 2012, 2013, or probably 2014. But I will say that if we can produce the public-private partnerships we're talking about producing, it will be a significantly smaller investment by Kenosha County. It'll be an investment that will have a multiplier effect countywide that will attract more professional people when you put it in conjunction with everything else we're trying to do and all that we've accomplished in the last 20 years. 20 years ago, I left Kenosha County after born and raised here. I left saying to my wife, I will not be back here. We did. We knew we wouldn't be back in Kenosha County. That's about the time Chrysler was closing. The period I spent out in Seattle, they tore down the plant. They started the industrial park. 3 years after I left, I came back and started an architectural price. And had been part of the transformation. Somehow wound up on the county board at 29 years old, was part of that transformation. So where are we going to be in the next 20 years? What are we going to say to the jockeys and Snap-ons and the Abbots who consider Kenosha County? What are we going to tell them we did? We swapped out a multiplier effect in our golf course operation. Sure, we fund it right now with a deficit. I understand that. We have a multiplier effect with our parks. You turn all this into park land, your multiplier effect will plummet as compared to what we pay to offset the cost of the park. We make decisions every day in our company. We go into debt once in a while, as I'm sure, Dennis, you do in your business on occasion. Sometimes it's short-term debt. Other times it's long-term debt. We entered into long-term debt to expand the golf operation. I would assume if we had that decision to make today, we wouldn't do it. But that doesn't mean we have the ability to say today we can't factor in that debt. Or, more importantly, and there's been supervisors mentioned in this room who have talked about golf course operation. Those very same supervisors have said in the past, make the decision to support golf or not support golf, to support providing that amenity to the residents of Kenosha County or not. And that very same supervisor supported it at that time. Yes, we can make that argument about many other topics that have come up over the past couple of years. My point is this. We can argue all day long that the debt we have shouldn't be factored in to the fact that they're currently, and I say they because that's where we always point, right? We're always pointing at Dan and his team are losing money right now. The truth of the matter is you do factor debt. You make a decision sometimes on long-term debt, recognizing that at some point in the future, that debt is off the books. You hopefully through that debt, you've positioned yourself in such a way that you're going to be even more prosperous at that point in time. So it isn't inappropriate to factor in the equation that in 2015, property would have paid off. It's also not inappropriate to look at national trends. For the first time since I've been on the board, we have a team in place that looks at future opportunities for these golf courses. They're looking at national trends. What we're talking about, this practice facility, is something we've been talking about for years, but we've always been landlocked around this concept that we have this red nine and there's nowhere else to go with it. So now we're saying, this is what national trends are telling us we should be doing in golf. And the way to do that is, I suppose, you look at it as a compromise. I look at it as a positioning ourselves for the future, because we're not getting rid of this property. Turn it all into parkland, like I said, and your multiplier will plummet. And then what are you going to say to the companies who are looking to move here? We have great parks. Kenosha County parks are always in the top of the state and beyond. But that's only going to go so far. So we have an opportunity here to cut some costs, eliminate the red nine in the long term, and provide what is a national requirement for a successful golf operation. It becomes even more of a destination than what we currently have, and I think that's the way we have to begin to look at it. It's not in here, but I think it needs to be coupled with it when the time comes, and that is the opportunity to have liquor sales on the golf course. I'm going to throw that out here today. I think it needs to be bundled into this plan when you talk about it. That's the way you should be looking at it. And just for reference, I trust we didn't draft the 50 years ago this language in the agreement.
That's directly out of the statute.
Not only did we not do it because none of us were here, but I'm saying it's what we are strapped with, I guess, or burdened with at this point in time, but it's state language. It's the way they put this plan together. Good, bad, or indifferent, we accepted it. We have a golf operation right now. I think to take and get rid of it or not look to enhance the facility you have, ultimately a short-sighted place. You know, I think it was also said at Tuesday's meeting that county government, there's something must be in the study here about county government being innovative or something. And the statement was made that by the individual that last he checked, that wasn't the role of county government. We should be picking up trash, plowing, and of course I'm paraphrasing here, picking up trash, plowing roads, and cutting parks or whatever the analogy was. The day we stop being innovators, looking for ways to create economic development. Notice I didn't say create jobs. Our job as elected officials is to create the environment that allows the private sector to create jobs. That's what the innovation is all about. If we're not going to be innovative about how we create an environment like happened at the city, we can argue all day long whether everything was perfect. Harbor Park, Lakeview Corporate, Business Park of Kenosha. That's all innovation. It's not a newly invented wheel by any means. It's examples from all over the country. But we took the time, they took the time 20-some years ago to get it right. Lakeview Corporate Park is right. This is all part of the equation. That's what innovation is all about when you're a government body. Leaders in the community, elected officials. That's what we need to be doing. Don't tell me that we shouldn't be innovative as elected officials. It's all about creating an environment that allows the development, which will multiply tenfold in terms of what it provides back in the terms of tax base. I read a great piece today, and if I had the opportunity, I'd have printed it off. And it says all of our problems in this country are tied to 545 people. Congressmen, senators, right? Every one of them says they're opposed to higher taxes, they're opposed to deficits, they're opposed to X, Y, and Z. Yet those are the only 545 people that get to vote on it every single day. It's not the lobbyists. They can take whatever amount of money they want, or give, I should say. Those 545 still have to cast the vote. If they're opposed to deficits, quit hammering the damn things. If you're opposed to pork barrel spending, quit doing it. It's all the same concept. It's about innovation. I'll stand up all day long and say that's what we should be doing. And that's what this plan is beginning to take a look at. I don't know if it's going to be the right solution day one. I'm prepared to put us in a position to start heading in the right, or continue to head in the right direction, because I think we have that. So that when 2015 is here and we take that debt off of the books, we have exactly what we have at Kemper Center. How many times have I heard on the board floor that Kemper Center is the most economical county park with the biggest payback that we have in our system? Why? Because we have someone else operating it. They raise funds. They kick in part of the operating costs. It's the same concept with the golf course. I'm comfortable, quite honestly, funding the golf courses the way we do. Because what does it cost us to operate Balance of Bright Debt? Do we have that number by chance? If Mr. Rubin is here, he may.
The park.
What does it cost us a year to have Bright Debt Park in our system?
That park,
$250,000. What was the deficit in park in golf this year? I'm not in favor of any additional spending any more than anybody else is. Now we'll hear that the number of people, residents, that are served by the golf courses doesn't balance out. I have rarely used our lakefront in my entire 46 years here. I suppose I shouldn't pay taxes on that. So you've got Brightdale Park raised about $250,000. You've got a golf course raised about $250,000. Brightdale Park is nothing but maintenance. The golf course, you have the opportunity, and I think if we continue, we'll have a greater opportunity to turn that into a benefit in terms of revenue. I'm not looking for anything more than a break even, quite honestly, but I think the opportunity, once the debt is gone, to see a return on that. It's a solid investment, in my opinion. One in particular, when you hear the fact that you're not going to be able to get rid of it. So let's say we turn it into park time. Now we're going to double that $500,000 or $250,000 to $500,000 to support a park that has no opportunity for return. And I don't think you sell to the bigger picture of creating an environment that attracts business if you do that. If we go the route of the enhanced practice facility, how much of the work can you do with the work group like we have done in all the parks in the last couple of years?
What we figured was on $495,000 would be the stuff that we would have to outsource. That does not include all the stuff that we would be doing, the brushing, the tree clearing, the all the other opportunities that we have to use that work group. And it would be that's what the money that we figured would need to be spent by the county to enhance that facility to that.
Sure.
We haven't totally dived into this was put together as well as we could without outsourcing any of the engineering fees or any of the things that would have to be done for that.
So if you look at the comparison, I don't know what slide that was on, but I just keep going forward if you would. Right here. You have an opportunity to just close the red Dine, which is what the resolution was provided, if you close the Red Dine flat, and you would save $235,000 in 5 years.
So I think it's the second one.
Keep the Red Dine open.
I'm sorry. $560,000 in 5 years. You keep the Red Dine open, you cut your capital by almost $750,000 over the course of the next several years, and you have a net savings after 5 years of $482,000. Yet you put yourself for less than $100,000 over 5 years, you put yourself in a position that is something we've been talking about for quite a while that matches the national trend and where golf courses are headed. For less than $100,000, if you take the bigger picture. If you say to yourself, innovation in county government isn't a negative. And if you look for opportunities to bring a potential big name golf operation, and potential not so much an operation, but a sponsor, maybe, someone that can put naming rights on a driving range. You got to think of some of that stuff. Maybe you got an opportunity to cut that number even more. So I'm in support of option three, and I'd like to see that come forward with the community calendar.
Thank you, Brian. Supervisor Frederick.
One question I have is, with the recommendation it waits till 2013, is there any reason that they couldn't start doing the development in 2012 instead of waiting a year? Is there problems in the county board that we have to make changes, or what would be the situation?
We haven't put it in the CIP budget. We don't have it budgeted at all.
So we couldn't do any modifications. We'd have to wait until 2013 to get it going.
Anyone else? Supervisor Colmar.
A question and comment. If we did go with Resolution A and closing the Red Nine, and say a few years down the road that the demand is back, all our courses are full, how much money would it cost at that point to turn it back into a golf course? Have you guys looked at that at all?
I guess we have. We spoke with Bob Lohman from Lohman Architects, and he said it's about 75% of a new build, depending on how long you wait. But one of the things is the irrigation is completely shot, so that would have to be done. So that's the $534,000. It already is the $733,000 of deferred maintenance, so that alone is $1.267 million. And then, with it going, we would probably have to regrass the greens and rebuild the bunkers and that type of thing. So, what Bob Lohman said is about 75%, and it's $200,000 to create a new hole. So we were figuring about $1.35 to $1.4 million to redo the whole nine. So a little bit more than what the capital expenditures is looking at right now.
Kind of,
yes.
Okay. I respect everyone's opinions here, and I know there's heated passion on both sides. I kind of look at it as a supply and demand issue. I just think we've talked about it on the floor a few times that we right now maintain 63 holes, which is a lot, I think, for our county, especially when you look at the landscape of the other golf courses private in the area. You got, somebody said, Brightondale, Maple Crest, Big Oaks, Bristol Oaks, Strawberry Creek. I just kind of agree with, echo with some of Supervisor Esposito's comments that it just doesn't make sense to me right now. Option two is the clearest option. If demand were to come back at that point, I think you could look at bringing something back if that's a possibility. But I'm not sold. I guess on the resolution three. I think our economic impact encompasses the whole area of private golf courses, as well as not only our own public courses but the private. So I do agree that there's some economic impact with our golf courses, but I think the private courses had a lot of economic impact, and that's got to look at as well. So I'm in favor of, I would like to see this discussion get to the board floor as well. So I'd like to support this and discuss it further.
It will get to the board floor, regardless of what we would adopt. What's before us is actually Resolution 80, which is exactly what you just spoke of.
Yeah, I guess my question, though, too, I support Resolution 80, but there again, if you close down the Red 9, and you know, we seem to be looking towards the future, and I can appreciate that, and envisioning this three-hole practice golf green issue, substantially less to take this close down Red 9 and make this part when we decide if we need it or the trends. I mean, national trends change every year. I do appreciate that aspect of it. But the money you would save by shutting it down, I think you would then, over time, have money to pay for this practice range type issue. So, I mean, that's kind of in my mind where I'm thinking too. You know what I mean? Do you understand where I'm coming from on that here? You know? So, that's something I need to kind of wrap my head around. So, I just wanted to comment on that. Thank you.
Hey, yeah, Supervisor Grady.
I think when you look at the different propositions before us as laid out by the committee tonight, before the committee tonight, you know, the knee-jerk reaction, the one closing down the Red 9, certainly would seem to be, you know, very prudent in terms of reactionary immediacy. And I think that's the big term, immediacy. But as we talked about 2015, the debt coming off, we should be looking towards the future. And if we're this far into it, I think we can basically make this a workable proposition, especially as time goes along. My comment would be, if we are indeed going to intend upon doing the Red 9 operation for this year, and it's going to have reduced maintenance, I would be in favor of, and we'll come up to golf rates later here in our discussion, I would suggest if we're going to reduce maintenance on the Red 9, we're going to continue to operate it, we go below $10 per 9 holes. That's my comment.
Any other discussion? Nothing? Okay, we have Resolution 80 before us.
Make a motion to approve Resolution 80.
I'll second.
Move a second to approve Resolution 80. Discussion? Further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
No. Motion fails. Are you the governor?
No.
No. I'll make a motion to approve the golf management recommendation that was put forward. Do not close the Red 9 in 2012 and then close the Red 9 for 2013 season and beyond.
Any discussion on that?
Second.
Move and second. Excuse me. Any discussion?
Sure.
Vice Mayor Lanero?
I would urge the committee in that resolution to include language that directs golf operations to put further detail into the analysis of the study in terms of what that practice facility is. Maybe it is only a driving range. Maybe it doesn't include the three holes. Maybe there's a better layout. Part of what is before you tonight is pressure from myself as well as chairman of the committee, Alderman, county executive. I say pressure, but to get this plan forward
Thank you, Supervisor. I was going to suggest that to the committee that we possibly have a resolution prepared for us for our next meeting with some input and information, that we would give the staff at least the input that you've had this evening, that we're going to proceed for 2012. But we'll look forward to the closing for 2013. But we want to put together a little more specifics, take a resolution to the county board. It's going to be, a fairly heavily debated option on the county board floor. So if it takes us till March to have something, that's fine. If that's okay with the
I'm going to rescind my resolution. Yes.
So that's the direction we'll take. Thank you.
Chairman?
Yes.
Would you like this to go to the next county board meeting or the March one? Can you explain what you
just said? Oh, it would go to the March one. It'll come to us. Okay. Supervisors will have input. We'll, with the resolution, yes. And we can discuss it. But what happened here this evening is Resolution 80 failed. So we'll move on. Resolution 79.
The next four or five slides are Resolution 79, which will adopt the philosophy study as the operating plan for golf. We're going to talk a little bit. There's a lot of information in there, a lot of recommendations that were made by Velocity. Some of which the golf management has already started, undertaken. We're going to talk slide 16 to 17 about things that the golf has already started working on. They were in the Velocity recommendations. First one is paving the cart paths. It's about $240,000 to do the white, $240,000 to do the blue. So in the capital budget for this year, we've got money to do the white. There is a payback. It's less than 10 years, a little less than 10 years, and the paths will last anywhere 15 to 20 years. So paving the cart paths is something that they recommended, but we already had it in the budget. Fixing the irrigation system, this is what they have recommended. $1,315,000. That is not the red irrigation. Somebody asked a question before, might have been Supervisor Grady. We cannot by budget resolution for 212 touch any irrigation on the red this year. The $1,315,000 is the white and blue. There's a slide that kind of recaps this at the end. The Velocity marketing recommendation also included, they had specified that we should attract higher end, less price sensitive customers. Should try to focus some marketing efforts on high-income zip codes. I'm not going to go into what they did there, but they had a dozen, 15 pages on all these different kinds of demographic data and how we could do that. They recommended adding draft beer as a beverage option, to hire a retail expert to redesign the selling floor. Golf had already done that, I think, 2 years ago when the dance crew came in. They hired a consultant that they knew came in that helped as best they could redesign the selling floor.
On the next page, other recommendations that we are pursuing and targeting younger golfers. Our junior program doubled at Brightondale. Or more than doubled at Brightondale for 2011, and we hope that happens again in 2012. I think it's a tremendous idea to create that Good Grades program. We are working on that. We're working on it with our POS system to create the loyalty program. We're working on the Granger League yet with the Carthage college students. We're advertising our special events and golf lessons and tournaments through our UAM Blasts and in other areas. I'm working with Krista Kramer. She's the assistant general manager at the Prime Outlet Malls, to co-brand and to market there. We're advertising price matching, that we will match any advertised price and save you the shipping.
We are looking at billboards on I-94 and seeing what kind of return and what kind of expense that would be. There's other marketing opportunities. We're working with local hotels. We're going to approach Braun Recreation Center about handing out our coupons. We're going to look at the yacht club and other areas to help promote the golf course.
In the Velocity marketing plan, there were also some recommendations that the future action has not yet been determined. There might have been some analysis done, but the golf management has not started any of this yet. If Resolution 79 would be adopted, close Red 9 at Brightdale, we talked about that. Modifying the pest course maintenance program, spend less money, keep the conditions playable, but the quality of the course would go down as a result. They recommended enhancing the Brightdale Range Practice Facility. Talk about that. Building patio space at Brightdale for $30,000. They also recommended hiring a consultant with brand awareness study for Kenosha County Golf.
There are future actions that are yet to be determined if we would like to implement would be increase the rates at and the prices at both golf courses on golf and food and beverage, raise the season pass prices, outsource concession operations and serve liquor, outsource the golf shop operations, require credit cards for making tee times and charge for no-shows, and replace the lowest paying customers for all recommendations from the Velocity study.
Well, management was asked to make a recommendation to the administration and the committees regarding Resolution 79. There's a lot of good ideas in the study. Many of them are workable. Many of them are in process or we can implement quickly and cost effectively. The implications of some of the Velocity recommendations are not quite so clear, and there could be a price tag associated with them that either not budgeted or we're not sure what that number might be yet. Further analysis of these types of recommendations is warranted. The Golf Course Division will continue to implement as many of these recommendations as possible and as resources allow, but the recommendation is not to adopt Resolution 79 as is, as the golf operating plan for 2012.
Any discussion? Supervisor Grady.
On 79, Resolution 79, I look at the Velocity report, much as I would look at it as a menu. It's got a veritable list of information, suggestions, many that I think are great, but it's really incumbent upon ourselves as a committee to evaluate them, to take the ones that pass merit, look at them, and even more specifically for Dan and Dave, our hired professionals, to vet these and say which apply to our conditions specifically and how they can be brought forward. So as much as I appreciate this Velocity report, it's a great piece of work. It's a starting point. This is not an end point that we're going to simply take all the recommendations and go with them. So I would encourage not adopting Resolution 79 as it is stated.
I agree with Supervisor Grady. However, what I would like to see eventually is take these ideas and to put a timetable together for this committee of when you believe that these ideas, what you think should be implemented, and how long it would take to implement them, and what the cost would be eventually. And that way we would get an idea of, there would be the start of a plan coming out of this. Not from what these basic ideas, but the start of looking at it from a short-term and a long-term plan.
Thank you, Supervisor. Supervisor Getz?
I agree with Supervisor Grady as well. I believe that this was a study that was done. It's not a business plan. As we said, Dan is here to put that business plan together and to present it to us as the county board. With the help of a study like this, hopefully he can make some good decisions and bring forth good positive feedback. So I would
not be in favor of adopting Resolution 79.
Anyone else? If not, could I have a motion on Resolution 79?
How many such motions, Mr. Chairman?
Two. To do what?
To not adopt Resolution 79.
Moved by Supervisor Greening. Was there a second?
Second.
Supervisor Frederick. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Youth and Governance. Aye. So Resolution 79 fails. We'll move on to the 2012 golf rates.
The golf rates were sent out in your packet. Administration is recommending that we do not raise our golf rates for the second year in a row. We did have a slight increase in 2010 when we got the new cart fleets, but 2011 and 2012 were the same rates. If you saw in your packet on the second page, we ranked 16 area golf courses and did a golf course rate comparison. And in that comparison, it shows that we were, I believe, fourth and eighth in rates compared to the rest of the golf courses. I did that update that today with 2012 rates, and we actually fell to fifth and at Brightondale and seventh for area golf courses and what things what people are going to charge for 2012. So we are, you know, close to the middle of the pack with our current rates. So we would recommend that they pass the way that they are.
Any questions? Supervisor Green?
Just on the Red Hand business that was alluded to earlier, if we are to operate the Red Hand, as has been discussed and budgeted, of course, for this year, reducing the maintenance on it and so-called having a rough red or a course that's not as playable as others, there actually may be some marketing value, maybe some ability to draw patrons out there at a reduced rate. So I thoroughly, heartily encourage you to look at rates which would be below $10 per nine holes to see if that can be accomplished. We can actually build some interest out of the proposed, maybe, last year of the ninth operation.
Any other discussion? If not, we have a motion to approve the 2012 rates.
I'll move to.
Moved by Supervisor Gentz. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second by Supervisor Colbert. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Youth and Governance?
Aye.
All rates are approved with the recommendation, Dan, that you look at how we can enhance that rate for the Red Knight. Director's report.
The projects that we are working on at Brightondale Links for 2012 are the Whiting Birch 18 irrigation system and the cart pass. We're trying to get the most of the irrigation system that we can upgraded. And then finish paving the courses cart pass. We have went out to bid for all of the 1970 installation irrigation and upgrading the 1990 irrigation that's out there. We do have it out to bid where there is additions and deductions so that it can fit within our budget when it comes back in. We're hoping that we can accomplish most of the golf holes with new irrigation on the White Birch and then pave the rest of that golf course. We also are booking several outings, and we have booked a couple new leagues, a Wednesday night league at Brightondale for 28 people and a Thursday night league at Petrifying Springs for 24. So bookings are going well at this point. Finance and personnel are creating an RFP to see if it would be more cost-effective for all seasonal or temporary employees to be retained through an employment agency, such as Express. The project will determine whether we can save any money on unemployment and workers' compensation expense by having a temporary employment agency providing our employees. We have conducted a cash audit for most golf courses. Jim and several people of finance came out and did an unannounced cash audit. I believe it was included in your packet. Is there any discussion that you'd like to have on that?
No, that's pretty clear.
Yeah.
That was simple.
Okay. And then we are going to go with...
Unless you want to.
2 minutes. And I just want to comment from a financial perspective. It's a surprise audit. We didn't do this for any particular reason. It's just good business practice to go out and check these things. It hasn't been done for a while. We focused on cash accounts, security procedures, use of the system, processes, and procedures. And the results were very positive that the assets are being handled properly, that's primarily cash. The new system is being used, but there's opportunities to use it more. And it's going to be an ongoing working process. So we had very positive results from a live standpoint.
And then we will be going to finance Thursday with a resolution to, budget modification to repurpose some funds that was also included in your pack. There was $7,000 strictly budgeted for new ice machines at Bragdale. We had those ice machines cleaned and thoroughly gone over by repairman, and they are working, properly now. And so we would like to repurpose that money for food service improvements. I would think that we can do some good things with our food service if we're able to repurpose that money. Also, last year we had problem with the water lines. All the water came out of the golf maintenance building, and it would be budgeted $135,000 to rerun water lines to the pavilion and to the clubhouse. We were able to accomplish that with drilling new wells at the pavilion and the clubhouse, and we were able to do that for $50,000, so we saved over $85,000. We'd like to repurpose that for the golf course irrigation. So we're going to go to finance Thursday and ask if we can do that.
Any questions or comments on those two? Anything else?
No, sir. Thanks for your time.
Anybody else have anything? I have one question. It's been quite a few meetings since I've had to sign a mileage thing for people. Are we not doing that anymore? Do you guys just report it? Or how we've been handling that?
Could you send a report down to the county clerk?
Off the minutes. Okay. All right. Good. All right. We have a motion to adjourn.
Just before we adjourn, we have a date of our next scheduled meeting. Will it be the first?
It'll be the normal.
The regular
normal. Yeah. Yep. And if anyone has any input on that resolution, feel free to contact myself or Ray so that we can have something for that evening that we can. Yeah. Motion to adjourn. Moved and seconded. Supervisor Esposito, Supervisor Gentz, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.